pennies. You can count to 100 in a minute. If you started right now counting pennies, you'd have counted 6,000 in an hour. 10 hours later, you'd be a little past halfway to the number of innocent Iraqi dead. And no bathroom breaks, you lazy killers. When you do it, give each penny a name. And use good American names so you won't be tempted to indulge your Republican racism by giggling when you say Abdul, Mohammed, Ibrahim. And make sure you imagine them white, lily white, so you can't shrug and say, too bad. And make sure you imagine them good Christians so their deaths will matter to you. 3,000 innocents died on 9/11. Iraq had nothing to do with it. But you Bushy people insisted that Iraq had to pay for Saudi murders. So now you've made Iraq pay to the tune of, more math, sorry, 33 dead women and babies for every dead American from 9/11. Is your bloodlust satisfied? I've heard people like that filthy Falwell say that God will only bless this nation when we turn to Him. Does murdering a tenth of a million people amount to turning to God? Can you really make that argument? 100,000 people is a nice start on a brand new Holocaust. Jesus. And the Holocaust took Hitler 8 years. Hey, we're on track to beat him. We can break the record. Yay! We can win. We're so godly, aren't we? Remember when Falwell and his demon cohort, Pat Robertson, said the queers caused 9/11? Do you remember that? Remember that? Here, let me slip you a little 411 about 9/11. It wasn't the queers. It was the killer Republicans and their Saudi pals. Don't you love it when you hear these baby blasters say, "We're killing them over there so we don't have to fight them here." Morons! George Bush and the rest of you Republicans are why we're going to have to fight them here. Poor, dead from the neck up Republicans. George Bush is going to get you killed in a revenge attack, and you're giggling all the way to your own slaughter. Because you got to remember, these people are worlds better at revenge than we are. They still remember the First Crusade. And I can guarantee you, it'll be another 1,000 years, and they'll still be remembering the rape of Iraq and taking their vengeance against furious George out on generations yet unborn and undreamt of. The pity is that decent people will die for their revenge, too. In time, the people of this nation will come to spit and curse at the very mention of this mass-murdering Hitler wannabe. So here's what I propose. Everyone who votes for Bush needs to wear a discreet tag, badge, necklace, bracelet, whatever, we don't need to see it now, saying that they voted for Bush. That way, when the next Arab terrorist revenge attack comes, we'll know which corpses to just leave out for the vultures and the maggots. I'm Bob Kincaid. He can't remember being a member of the Concerned Alumni of Princeton, but he bragged about it on his resume. When were you lying? That's simple enough. Are you lying now or were you lying then? And behind all this, you got to remember the Concerned Alumni of Princeton were really, you know, they had their maiden forms all in a twist because Princeton was admitting women. I always found the presence of women at college to be a good thing. Now, they didn't get around to having women at Princeton until when? And the boys all got mad? Does this draw a parallel with some of the stuff they say goes on in the all-male boarding schools in merry oldie England? And I don't mean to offend any of our listeners in the UK. But that kind of stuff is, it's axiomatic. What kind of guy bitches about girls coming to school? Oh, they're going to ruin it all now. We can't sit around and fart and scratch ourselves. The girls done come to school. That's what it boils down to, isn't it? Every time you hit, you know, the Citadel. Princeton. The He-Man Woman Haters Club. Those fine old oak-paneled smoke-slickened rooms in the, where you sit in the overstuffed Chesterfield and you spit and you scratch yourself and, you know, no girls. Call me crazy. I like girls. A lot. I married one. I liked them so much I bought the company. Yeah.
God.
Remember Victor Kiam? The new Remington razor. I liked the razor so much I bought the damn company. I like women so much, I married one. And that pinch-faced, beady-eyed little freak with his wife wearing the upholstery from a 57 Edsel is upset because they let girls into Princeton. Of course, he was upset that they were letting those people, you know, the ones with the dark skin. Next thing you know, they'll be letting in the Pakistanis! That's what, you know,
Senator Graham, I am not a bigot of any kind.
Yeah, well, keep telling yourself that. I can't believe this is going on in the 21st freaking century. When do we get to the Star Trek part where everybody's equal and, you know, we're not warring on Earth anymore and, you know, we got a... And the biggest problem we got is the freaking Klingons, the Romulans.
Bam.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right. It's all right.
Hey, good evening. 5.5 minutes after 7 o'clock. It's Thursday night. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we need to talk. You know, every time my wife says that to me, I kind of look up and go, oh, nothing good's going to come out of this because we don't need to talk. That means she wants to talk to me, and I need to listen. We need to talk. Yeah, really. Where is this bourgeois, for lack of a better word, this bug spray coming from, that I'm a hater? Please. When I hate something, I'll tell you. And you won't have to wonder. And you won't have any doubt, you Rethuglicans, in your tiny little minds. And please, if you're a Democrat, and you think for one almost mathematically incalculable second that you can have a legitimate, civil, polite, meaningful, goals-oriented discussion based upon sound principles of constitutional government with the stump licker bunch, you deserve the gut stomping you're going to get in spades. Really. I believe that. And I also firmly believe that you'll be sitting there praying and crooning kumbaya while the stump licker bunch kicks your teeth in, stomps on your kidneys, steals your purse, and smacks your sainted granny around a little bit for good measure. See, I don't suffer from political Alzheimer's like so many in what passes for my political party. I watched my party's convention last summer, you see, while they stayed on message, and I cringed. Man, I cringed. When the word went out to be nice to George, it was Christian decency at its absolute finest, really it was. There were enough cheeks turned by my party to make even Jesus Christ himself cringe at the gutlessness of it all. And meanwhile, off in some dim, dark, moss-laden, water moccasin, cotton-mouth, snake branch festooned bayou backwater, with the big cross just a-blazing and the tar and feathers boiling, the stump licker bunch was grinning like a pack of wolves licking blood out of a wire brush, putting a keen edge, baby, a keen edge on the long knives. And we, my party nominated that noble, horse-faced man of noble mien and sound financial principles. And after he'd been nominated and gone windsurfing for a few days, he went about the country calmly discussing his ideas. And the Stump Licker Bunch just grinned and got out their musty old army costumes and called themselves Swift Boat Veterans and lied and lied and lied and plunged those long, sharp knives into John Kerry in a scene so craven and bloody and evil it was fit to make Brutus and his Ides of March Brigade blush like schoolgirls hearing their first dirty joke. So, I sit here night after night, and God knows I love to do it, and I tell you, based on facts, the God's honest, unvarnished, and unflyblown truth. And some Rethuglican or lily-livered Democrat Dino, Democrat in name only, wants to say that I'm a hater? Oh, no. Physician, heal thine own sick, sissy self. I'm not a hater, but I will fight back, because I grew up with the Stump Licker Bunch. And I know them for who they are, and I know how they operate. Now, what kind of sick, sorry, sad mental process makes you think you can sit down with the Stump Licker Bunch and have a discussion? To those in my party who think that you can, you simpletons. 'Cause see, the Stump Licker Bunch will let you talk yourself blue in the face. They will let you have the first word, the middle word, and the last word. And they'll let you sit there and sing a chorus of Kumbaya. And they'll let you make daisy chains. And then they'll take out those long knives and slit your throats like the lambs among the wolves that you most assuredly are. And you lambs among the wolves will bleat contentedly until the long knives come out. I want to know who among the sissies in my party are going to have this dialogue with. Who are they going to have it with, these Neville Chamberlain wannabes? When the Stump Licker Bunch has destroyed Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and grannies having little friskies and saltines for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, are the Democrat sissies in the center going to tell me we've achieved peace in our time? Can the ones of us who want to fight spare a little extra change to give umbrellas and bowler hats and overcoats to the sissy centrist Democrats? Because they are. They're Neville Chamberlain wannabes. And here's a little news flash if you missed it. Appeasement doesn't work. You cannot appease the Stump Licker Bunch. Because once you're done trying to appease them, they'll rabbit punch you, kick you in the kidneys between the legs, and when you're down right there groaning and bent over, then they'll start stomping on you real good. And that is the modern Republican Party. Who do you want me to have this dialogue with? People that think working men are garbage? Who do you want me to have this dialogue with? People who think my children, your children, our children, middle class, lower class, don't have a right to go to the doctor when they're sick? Who do you want me to have this dialogue with? I know the Stump Licker Bunch, sunshine, and you can't talk to them. The only thing they want to know is whether you're going to mash them in the mouth and bloody them up real good before they do you. And if you don't, they will. And they're doing it every day. George Bush at his little economic summit conference. Social Security's sick and it's going to die and we're going to kill it to make it better. And they're making the numbers up as they go along, and the liberal media is out there reporting it as truth.
It has been determined by the Bush administration that the Social Security system is very ill and will die, and in 2042 there will be no more benefits.
Bug spray! I've read the numbers. Social Security is completely healthy at 100% benefits until 2052. If we do nothing after 2052, Social Security is good at 80% benefits for the foreseeable future.
Nah, it's broke, and I want to fix it because my Wall Street broker buddies want in on that money.
And I have heard people say, well, you know, Social Security would be okay if we just took it out of the general revenue stream. Do you remember the 2000 election when Al Gore said lockbox and all you people snickered at it? Al Gore wanted to take Social Security out of the general revenue stream. I remind you, when Social Security passed the Congress of the United States of America, it passed without a single Republican vote. Not one. They hated it then, socialism. And they hate it now, and they, the stump licker bunch, will not be happy until it has bled its entire life out on the ground at their feet. Now you tell me who you want me to have this dialogue with. Do you dialogue with killers? Do you negotiate with terrorists? Last I checked, you don't. But that's just me, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on. Head on.
Do you get it yet? We've got to take the language back. They've got us using their terms. I heard it today that Social Security is a way to make people dependent upon government. No, it's not. That's what they say it is. Sad, sorry, damn bunch of liars. It is not about government dependence, and it is not communism, and it is not socialism. It is Christianity with its boots on the ground, baby. It is, in fact, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. It is that at its very heart and soul. It's not dependence on government. It is dependence on, it's not even dependence. It is a form of hope and reliance upon your brother and your sister Americans, because God forbid someday you might stand in the shoes of the weak and the weary and the wounded. The Republicans call it dependence upon big government because they hate it. They hated it when it was passed in the 30s, and not a single Republican voted in favor of it. And they hate it in the 40s and the 50s, and fathers tell their sons, and Republican sons tell the Republican grandsons, and the Republican grandsons tell the Republican great-grandsons what an evil communist socialist plot Social Security is on the face of this great nation. And they remember from generation, yea, verily unto generation, they remember their hate for the poor, their hate for the working, their hate for the needy, the dying, the blind, the sick, the maimed, the wounded, and the weary. They remember. And now they have their knight on his black steed in his black armor with bright, bold, sharp steel blinking in the sun. And they want to gut the corpse. Because, you see, they talk about big government programs because they hate government, whether it's big or small, if it in so much as an iota gets in the way of their insatiable greed. Have you figured it out yet? Is the little tiny bulb flickering in the back of your mind yet? I'm not preaching hate. I'm not the one assaulting the firmament. I am not the one that wants to fill the heavens with missile defense systems that don't work in the rain. I see timber trucks coming out my road, and I grieve for the timber cutters who lose fingers and arms and legs because their greed-driven employers don't give a tinker's damn about them, and half of them are dead-beaten on their workers' comp. I grieve. And I feel sympathy and pity, so don't call me a hater. But I am very much a realist, and I understand what they're doing. And what they are doing, I do despise.
God made the mountains. God made the sky. God made the people. God knows why. He fixed up the planet as best as he could. Then in come the people and gum it up good.
Head on.
There's a whole lot more stupidity outside of West Virginia than there is in it. In large part because we don't have nearly as many Republicans as a lot of other states have, like North Carolina. You can't swing a dead cat in North Carolina without hitting a Republican. And apparently they're really thick. Thick as thieves at North Carolina. And they're really, really, really thick at the East Waynesville Baptist Church. Mavis, Bob's going to beat on the Baptists again, daggummit. Yeah, I'm going to beat on these Baptists. I'm going to hammer them. Now, the preacher there is a right reverend fellow named Chan Chandler. And the Reverend Chan Chandler, he likes to close watches. You know this is going to be another one of them sexual pre-version Baptist stories. No, it's not.
In the pulpit of his charitable organization under IRS code 501c3, and he actively campaigned.
He was so serious about it, he went into the pulpit.
He claims did not vote for Joyne. He didn't vote for George W. Bush. He is not a Christian. No.
Just get off excommunicating anybody. That I always thought that was the Roman Catholic Church's gig, but who am I? You know, the breaking of the candles, and thou art anathema. I excommunicate thee, and you throw the big candle on the floor, and the king feels bad. And East Waynesville Baptist Church last Sunday.
And he said, well, what it is the church members are upset because I named people. But I do it again because my Lord Jesus told me to do it. And I did it according to the Word of God. I would do it again because it is according to the Word of God to call out the Democrats. Yay.
So he excommunicated 9 members and 40 others followed. One former church member, who is nameless according to this Associated Press report, said that the Reverend Chan Chandler told some of the members that if they didn't support George Bush, they needed to resign their positions and get out of the church or go to the altar, repent, and agree to vote for Bush. I have sinned against you! Yeah, this is real. This is how the wild-eyed fascist religion industry right feels right now. They think they've got the bit in their teeth and they can do anything they want. That's what you get out of the Baptists anymore. Poison. The East Waynesville Baptist Church. Why do I never get these stories about Lutherans? Not even the Methodists. I don't get these stories about the Presbyterians or the Frisbyterians. You know the Frisbyterians. They believe when you die, your soul goes up on the roof and you can't get it down. The Episcopalians? God knows I don't get these stories about the Universalists. This is the poisoning of America by the Baptist Church. You remember the quote I had from James Madison the other night? Sometimes religious sects may degenerate into political factions. From what, Federalist number 10? And I talked about how the operative word there is degenerate. This is a degenerate church. This guy openly violated the laws of the United States of America Sunday by Sunday by Sunday by Sunday, and it's a Baptist church, so Wednesday by Wednesday by Wednesday by Wednesday, and Sunday night by Sunday night by Sunday night by Sunday night, violated the laws of the United States of America that you and I have to live by. But because he did it in the name of a bunch of Republican punks, he gets away with it. Now, was it last night or the night before that I had the story for you about the warning coming down from Elaine I Hate Working People Chow, the Secretary of Labor? Bush Administration Labor Department has sent out threats against organized labor, telling them they'd best be careful how they spend their money opposing the president's Social Security piratization scheme. They had best be careful how they do that. Yeah, that Bush administration that threatens working people but gives a pass to megalomaniacal Baptist ministers in East Waynesville, North Carolina, who want to excommunicate people for the way they vote. Damn him! Chan Chandler, upstanding righteous man of God. Damn him. They was upset because I named people. I named the Democrats who voted for that John Kerry.
And I would do it again, yea, Jesus, I would do it again because it is the Word of God. Sounds to me like it was the Word of Chan Chandler. And Chan Chandler has decided that he is the Word of God. This is what you get in a cult. It's called a cult of personality, where the guy standing in the box at the top of the at the front of the room is more important than the message. Now, some 40 people have left the church as a result of the mad ravings of the Reverend Chan Chandler. But you know what's disturbing? There is another number of people who didn't. There is another group of people within that hateful little congregation of filth that stood by Chan Chandler and agreed with him for throwing out their brothers and sisters in Christ for not having the right political views. Is that the Christianity that you were raised with? It isn't the one I was. Is that the understanding of Christianity which you were taught? From the time you were tiny, it isn't the one I was taught. No, not at all. 49 people gone out of that church. 49 people chased away from Jesus Christ by a monster who thinks that George Bush is Christ. Now, a simple question. Should this clown's 501c3 designation be pulled? Of course it should. Politics is about the filthiest thing you could bring into a church. One might even say it's an almost demonic presence inside one. And the Reverend Chan Chandler, upstanding ordained Baptist minister, flung the church doors wide and said, "Come on in, Beelzebub, split my church, because my politics are more important than my soul." And you dare wonder, why I despise and loathe people like this. Why I refuse to call them Christians. Why I call them religion industrialists and evangelo-fascists. Is there anything in your heart that tells you that Christ Jesus, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter who walked the dust of Judea and never owned so much as a pot to cook in? Do you think that he would approve of this? Demanding that people come down to the altar and fall on their knees and beg forgiveness for the vote that they cast in this secular republic. "Oh, forgive me, Pastor Chandler. I voted for John Kerry, but I repent. I'll never do it again. I'll never vote for another Democrat. Please just bring me back into your warm and loving bosom, Pastor Chandler." I can usually keep my equanimity in most stories, but this one just makes me want to use all those words I'd be ashamed for my mother to know I know how to use. God rest her soul. All those fun little FCC nightmares just want to come flying out of my mouth like little bats when I think about Chan Chandler, mainstream Baptist minister. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Dear God, hope you got the letter, and I pray you can make it better down here. I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer, but all the people that you mean, them starving on their feet, 'cause they don't get enough to eat from God. Can't believe in me.
Head On.
Oh, the young, the rich or poor, all alike me, you know. No wealth, no land, no silver, no gold. Nothing satisfies me but your soul. Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year?
This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And on Wednesday evenings, we usually, in a tongue-in-cheek sort of fashion, well, we have our prayer meeting edition. Well, this is that prayer meeting edition, and there's nothing funny about it. Right after I got off the air last night,
news began to circulate that 11 out of, or rather that 12 out of the 13 miners trapped at Sago Number 1 in Upshur County, in the mine there, in the depths of the earth, that 12 were, and the word that was used most frequently, were miraculously alive. CNN carried it, MSNBC had it, Fox ran with it. It was all there. It was all there. And that persisted for a couple, 3 hours. It began being reported on national radio newscasts. 12 out of 13 trapped miners miraculously found alive. And at the church, the little Baptist church, the little Sago Baptist church, across the street from Sago Number 1, a tiny speck in the empire of Wilbur Ross Jr., Sago Number 1, at the church there, they sang. And at the church there, the bells pealed out in joy for the miracle to which they had been party. And it did go on for hours. 2 hours, 3 hours. The loved ones gathered in the church were told that the survivors didn't want to go straight to the hospital, that they said they wanted to be carried to the church, to those who loved them best, that they might see them before they went on. They were told this. They were told. And yet, 2-3 hours in, the word began flashing around. It was all a horrible mistake. There is but one survivor, and he, Randall McCloy, Jr., is clinging to life. What a horror. Perhaps the best impression of what happened comes from Anderson Cooper of CNN. They have developed a real ability at CNN for getting him to situations where things just don't go quite right. And so Anderson Cooper described the scene as he observed it once the news was known that, in fact, it was all a lie, all a fraud, that 12 out of 13 were, in fact, dead. He said, well, he described the scene as he saw it, hear him first.
We have seen a number of police vehicles moving up in the direction of the mine. There are a number of very angry people here, and I can tell you a few of them have told me off camera. There has been talk, a lot of very aggressive talk about what they would like to do to the mine officials in this area.
Indeed, indeed. Now, the first thing that Anderson Cooper said was that, I see a lot of police cars. Do you know why that is? Do you know why? Now, back up. Because at the time that the families were told that the people whom they loved were alive, the time between that moment and the moment that the coal company knew that all but one were dead was 20 minutes. But it took the next hour and 40 minutes. It took the next hour and 40 minutes to get the SWAT teams in place. Because once again, government feared its people. Because those aggrieved human beings wanted to lash out. And the first priority was to protect the mine and protect the company. So it took those 2 hours to get the SWAT teams in place in case any of those bereaved human beings would happen to rise up on their hind legs and demand that they be treated like human beings. It took 2 hours to get the SWAT teams in place. They were positioned along the road near the church. One man had to be wrestled to the ground when he lunged at the mine thugs who had lied to him. Fist fights broke out in the church when it became apparent what the lying, the extent, the depth, the totality of the mendacity in which the company had engaged. Do you understand? Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed at all. It's 2006. It might as well be 1906 in the New River coal fields when the baton and gun-wielding thugs would line up along the city streets to make sure that the workers damned well stayed in their place. Nothing has changed. In the newspaper today, there are comments from West Virginia House Speaker Bob Kiss, who says, well, we may have some new legislation out of this. We don't need new legislation, Bob. We don't need new legislation at all. We just need for workers to have the right to stand up and demand that they be treated fairly. Because, you see, and this is kind of the difference here, had this been a union mine, when that black damp or that white damp, when that puddling death that gathers in the mines, when that became known, any union worker could have called that safety violation in and known that he would have been protected against any sort of hate, the kinds of hateful retaliation that non-union mines are so well known for. Because, you see, they have violations in union mines, too. But you know who turns in those violations most of the time? Union miners, looking out for their brothers and sisters in the depths and bowels of the earth. Union miners look out for one another. Non-union miners do, too. But if they dare stand up and say, "Boss, that hole ain't safe. I ain't a-going," the boss says, "That's right, you ain't, and you ain't coming back neither, boy. Collect your severance pay if you got any coming, and get out of here, and don't come back. We don't like your kind hereabouts." Now, bear in mind, MSHA law, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, MSHA law says that a retaliation against a worker for reporting a safety violation is actionable, and that the worker may have relief against the company and may have his back pay and may be forcibly rehired. Yes, it does say that. And all laws are always written for the company. Because if that man on that non-union job is fired, it will take him a year, 2 years, to have his case heard and to receive something approaching an idea of justice. And in the meantime, in those 2 years, children go hungry, rent goes unpaid, power bills, the utilities get turned off because that lone coal miner from that non-union operation has nowhere to turn. This is the situation that led up to the explosion at Sago Number 1. And while we're at it, tell you what. Let's stop calling it Sago Number 1. Let's know it for what it is. It's the Katrina mine. The same level of abject disdain, unconcern, that swirled in the foul and fetid waters of New Orleans in the wake of and aftermath of Katrina, the same thing obtained near Tallmansville, West Virginia, at the International Coal Group's Sago Number 1 Widowmaker. Did the company have anything to fear? Was it really necessary to position marksmen to stand against them in case the company and the money was threatened? People very seldom stand on their own hind legs. And I hate to tell you this, it breaks my tiny heart to tell you this, nothing will change out of this. Nothing. Nothing. Safety violations will continue to pile up at other International Coal Group mines, and other miners will die. You see, you gotta understand, within the way that the government categorizes things, it's only a mining disaster if 5 or more human beings live their life. So, as long as the miners are dying off 1 or 2 at a time, baby, we won't call it a disaster now, will we? No. Because the government and the law says it isn't. It isn't a disaster when one worker dies. It's only a disaster when enough workers die that somebody shows up with a microphone and a camera and makes the Bennett Hatfields of the world dance and try to answer questions. And remember, he's been briefed. He's been briefed by the corporate counsel for the International Coal Group. He's been told what not to say. Already those three hateful words are being bandied about in the press. What happened? Was it an act of negligence by the International Coal Group? Or was it just, and here are those three words, was it just an act of God? Because, you see, workers, when they think that their loved ones have survived, they thank Almighty God for the survival. On the other hand, God gets used like a cudgel by the coal company. Because when workers die, when human beings die, when innocents die, the coal company gets on the phone to its lawyers in Charleston at Jackson and Kelly or Spillman and Thomas or Casto and Cheney or Robinson and McElwee or Rice Bowles. They get on their lines to the lawyers, and the lawyers say, "Don't worry, boss man, we'll call it an act of God." That's how it works. That is how it works. And now the families have to fight a little bit harder with those lawyers in Charleston just to get the blood money from the coal company. And meanwhile, off in the offices in Manhattan of Wilbur Ross Jr., a waiter pours another glass of Cabernet. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Kiss me.
Have you got things figured out?
We're smarter than the average bear there, Brad.
Oh, man. Is that Bob Kincaid?
It is Bob Kincaid.
Hey, brother. How are you, my friend?
You know, little miracles for little people. I'm awake.
Yeah? And it's about 3 a.m. where you are, huh?
It is 3 a.m. and 20 seconds.
West Virginia.
West by God, Virginia.
Yeah. Now, I've been teasing you all night, teasing your 3 hours here or so. I know you've got some thoughts about your very good friend, Senator Byrd.
I'm a little scorched.
Yeah?
Yeah. I know we've got to keep our eyes on the prize here.
Yeah.
But for something a little further down the road, Brad, what I'd like to suggest is that as we contact him and we tell him to do the right thing, I'd like for folks to maybe be able to offer him an alternative.
Okay, how do we do that?
Well, he's got this little problem, Brad. Back in March of 2005, all of West Virginia was positively a titter. A quiver, if you will, at the prospect that West Virginia's last two-term ultra-filthy Republican governor's daughter, a woman named Shelley Moore Capito, she was going to run against Robert Byrd.
Right.
So we had this urgent barn is burning fundraising campaign for Bob Byrd.
Right.
And if you go to MoveOn.org, and if you go to a section there called Success Stories, you will find that MoveOn.org raised for Robert Byrd, sit-down sports fan,
right,
in excess of $800,000.
And here's the thanks they get.
Yeah. Now, I mean, granted, we're not all little, you know, nickel and dime Jack Abramoffs or anything that think we're buying a vote.
Right.
But, you know, when you take money from the ultra-liberal Michael Moore wing of the Move On.
Yeah.
Then somehow a little consideration is at least due.
Well, maybe he's just going out of his way to prove there's no quid pro quo. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, out of his way and out in a way that doesn't need to be gone to. So the alternative we need to present him, Brad, is this possibility, you know, if you're hell-bent on voting for Alito, okay, but we'd kind of like our money back to give to real progressives, real liberals. You don't deserve it.
I agree. And I wish, frankly, and let me put in a plug, because we've been running all night at WhiteRoseSociety.org, Crystal1.net, WhiteRoseSociety.org, I know is your home base out there with Ben Birch,
right.
And they are run by, by folks who give donations. And rather than going to folks like Bird or even MoveOn.org, and I wish the hell they were out in front of this thing even more, you know, give it.
this thing on. Man, isn't this some music for 3 o'clock in the morning? Or slightly post-midnight on the West Coast. This is West Virginia calling. Are we reaching? Good morning, good morning, good morning. For everywhere short of perhaps Alaska and Hawaii, Mariana's Protectorate, perhaps. It is indeed morning. And for the first time in a long, long, long time, I, Bob Kincaid, am a morning guy. Don't let anybody kid you. My eyelids are propped open with toothpicks. Nah, I'm wide awake. I am absolutely wide awake, thrilled to death to be participating in the Young Turks filibuster and giving them a shot at a little bit of real, live, honest, Jesus, meaningful shut-eye. Because I see this as being very, very important. We are, now, for those of you who don't know me, I'm a child of the space age. I was born in the same year that, well, we really got the space program cooking, 1963. And I remember growing up with, what was his name, Jules Berg on ABC, was it Jules Bergman, Jules Bergman, on ABC News when, and I, as a child, I learned to time things as T minus this and T minus that. Well, folks, we are at T minus 12 hours, 47 minutes, 26 seconds and counting. If I did the math right, that's something else you'll come to learn about me. Yeah, math is not my strong suit. From the cloture vote. It is what we would call here in West Virginia nut-cutting time. This is where the rubber meets the road, folks. This is where we separate the wheat from the chaff. And many, many, many congratulations to Brad, our good friend Brad Friedman from bradblog.com for another superior 3 hours of talk radio turned in. Of course, he did that Sunday night as well as Saturday night. Congratulations to Tom Hartman. Congratulations to Peter B. Collins. Congratulations to Mike Malloy. And congratulations most of all to Jenk and to Jilly and to everyone who was involved in coming up with this idea. Because what you are witnessing is literally the birth pains of a new form of media for liberals, for progressives, for people who generally care about the Republican-style democracy that was given birth more than 200 years ago. This is truly something special. And I have a real desire to hear from folks and your thoughts along these lines. And let me, the phone number is different this time through. We're trying to give as much of a break as we possibly can to everybody out there in L.A. So we're going to take the phone calls directly in here. We're donating, our toll-free telephone service. So if you want to call the program, we're paying the freight. All right? So get a pencil. If you're George Bush, you can't happen to you're not sleeping so good tonight. And who could sleep with as much blood on his hands? You know what I mean? Get your crayon out, George. Write down this number. 877-443-2366. Now, there's a reason for that number. It's the toll-free number we use during my regular Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time program. That spells
877-4-HEAD-ON. That's the name of the show that I do, Head On with Bob Kincaid. So 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. As we say, learn it, know it, use it. And let's show the Democratic members of the United States Senate and the Republicans who might be wavering. Let us show them what real democracy in action looks like, what it sounds like, and in fact, what it is. You with me on this? I certainly hope you are. Because what I said earlier, I take very, very seriously. This is the birth of something special and something new. When I first heard about this, I guess it was Friday night. I called in and talked a little bit with Jilly on the air. Had a great time, and I realized that the Young Turks had come up with something by which all of us liberals, all of us progressives, all of us real Americans, and I'm very serious about that, those of us who love our country are the ones who are in this fight to stop Alito right now. This is something special. I've been trying to come up with a metaphor for what this is. Okay. And what this is nothing short. Good morning. This is this. We who stand up in this are engaged in the propagation of our birthright. We who stand up to, and forgive, I hope you're not taken aback. I speak plainly. That's the only way I know to go about it. Alito, for all his academic looks and his pinched-up little face and his smarmy little voice, he's a thug, okay? And stopping this thug is no different. It is no different than Lexington and Concord. It is no different than the people who rushed to put the fire out at the United States Capitol and the White House in 1812. This is the liberal left or call it what you will, progressives, I don't care. This is our internet bucket brigade. Let's take it a little bit forward. This is Dunkirk. I was reminded, listening to Jenk and Jilly, I was reminded of the patron of truthful broadcasters everywhere. I was reminded of Edward R. Murrow. I was reminded of his broadcast during the Blitz, and it would begin with that stirring, spine-tingling tingling statement, "This is London." Guess what? This is London. This is Dunkirk. This is that time when every available resource is being pooled, is being pulled together, all in the name of saving that which was passed down to us in blood, in sweat, in tears, in toil, for lo, these 200-some-odd years. This is our time. This is now. And more than anything else, this is conversation radio as far as I'm concerned. So let's start the conversation. Let's go to Florence, Alabama. Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, welcome to the filibuster.
Man, we're doing it, aren't we?
We are doing it.
We are certainly doing it. Nominated by George Herbert Walker Bush on February 20th, 1990, to a seat vacated by John Joseph Gibbons, confirmed by the Senate on April 27, 1990, and received commission on April 30, 1990. Educated at Princeton, 1972, Yale Law School, 1975.
Wait, where's the membership certificate for the concerned bigots of Princeton?
Well, see, he didn't exactly burn anybody with a coat hanger, so.
Yeah, gotcha.
Gotcha. There you go. I'm very proud to be part of this. I'm a caller in, so I'm a part of it. I tell you, this is wonderful. I have dreamed about something like this happening with the liberals of this country and the world for long time.
Well, have you been doing your activism, Chris? Are you you know, I know you're in Alabama. You've got a turncoat in the form of Richard Shelby, and you have this guy is running for the miscongeniality of stupid Republican senators. You've got Jeff Sessions. And I mean, he's up there with Sam Brownback. He's up there with John Cornyn. He's up there with Orrin Hatch. You know, the real
You haven't seen Sessions giving any money back.
No. But I mean, have you made contact?
I've called and thank you for your comments.
Yeah, well, you gotta love that.
I said, well, you can call them that.
Well, don't, you know, by all means, Chris, remember, don't let them for God's sakes, don't let them ghettoize you. You may be in Alabama, and there's, God knows, there's nothing wrong with that, sweet home. Yeah. But you know, wear those other numbers out too.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure you've already got the list.
I'm gonna have to start doing what the young lady from England said in the Air Force to teachers, school teacher. We need school teachers. I'm gonna have to start saying, "Why do you need my information?"
Yeah.
The NSA has.
Right. Oh yeah. And by the way, good morning, Agent Fred, Secret Peanut Brittle. Okay, we've got that out of the way.
Yeah. Hello to that good old Echelon listening station just north of you in West Virginia. Hello.
Yeah, Sugar Grove, Maple Grove. What
Sugar
is it?
Grove, Sugar Grove, yeah. If you go to cryptome.org, boy, I'll tell you what, you can see exactly what the parking lot looks like.
I know. That's you sent that to me, and that's bizarre.
Yeah, you can see the parking lot. You can see, you know, where if somebody doesn't do their job, I'm sure they're taken outside and beaten up, wrapped up a little bit, and they don't have time to do it in the hallways.
Well, you know, in Bush America, what do you want?
What do you want? What do you want? The truth? No, sorry. No, sorry. No.
I know.
Not going to happen.
No. Well, you know what? Chris, we've got a very little bit of time to do a whole bunch of work. I hope you can, you know, I don't know what else you had on the plate for today.
We'll get it later on this evening.
I hope that burning up your telephone lines is part of it.
Yeah, whatever else I've got to say, we'll get together on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right,
later
sounds
on this
great.
Evening.
All right,
later on this evening.
All right,
everybody,
you take care.
Take care.
Bye now, and we'll keep it rolling. This is as exciting as any. I started doing radio when I was 15 years old. I come from a land where they still use vinyl to record music. And this is as exciting as anything I have ever done, in radio. And that, you know, that includes, some time subbing in on TV telethons for Jerry Lewis. That's the beautiful thing of what we got going on here. We're not asking for your money. Nobody is asking for your money. Cenk, Jilly, Tom, Peter, Mike, Brad, nobody has asked for a dime. All we're asking is for your passion. We're asking for your passion. We're asking for your help. We're asking you to maybe have a little bit more of a phone bill this month than the month before, or maybe next month. That's it. All we want is your help. As far as capacity is concerned, I think last I talked to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, we have capacity for something on the order of 1,000 more listeners on our servers alone. Now, that doesn't even speak to Crystal1.net and YoungTurk.com, TheYoungTurk.com. There is abundant room. This is where you get to do the Paul Revere thing. You get to ride through the internet space and tell people what is going on here. This is something for the ages. Some conversation radio, Bob. Go to the daggum phones. Patty is with us, calling from West Virginia. Hey, Patty. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're up at this insane time with me. Thank you.
Well, I am up because I decided that I had to go to D.C. I'm in New Jersey, so I...
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were in West Virginia. My bad.
No. Well, I will be shortly boarding a train, and what I would love to do is represent anyone who wants me to pay their senators a visit and convey a message. They just would need to send me their name, address, you know, what the senators always want to know who I'm speaking for.
Right.
And whatever message they want me to convey.
Okay.
Knocking on doors and walking the halls of the Senate Hart Building and the...
Well, I tell you what, I mean, do you have an email that you want to give and let folks contact you?
Yes, it's the Dean People.
The Dean People?
Yes, just all run together, lowercase. T-H-E-D-E-A-N People.
Okay.
At comcast.net.
Okay, let's do that one more time. The Dean People at comcast.net.
Yes, and it's, you know, as I said, just... No spaces, no underscores. The Dean People all run together. And they can visit our website at thedeanpeople.com.
Okay. Can they get a message to you there as well, or does it have to be through the email?
It comes to the same email.
Okay, great.
So, and we have posted, I'm sure folks may be aware of it, but there's a great tool on the internet, congress.org.
Uh-huh.
And... You can send emails, you can send telegrams, it provides lookup information for local media, it gives you staff member names.
Wow.
One of the functions that it has is for $6, you can post what they call a soapbox alert. So you put up, you know, hey, I want people to do X.
Right.
And on part of the page, if you just go to congress.org, you see these soapbox alerts along the side. And we have posted one just a few minutes ago. So if folks, you know, just want to hear anything more about what we're doing or what I intend to do, they can visit congress.org and check out our soapbox alert.
Wonderful.
Actually, I think the heading is something like you can hire a D.C. lobbyist because that's...
Oh, okay. I saw that. You can hire a D.C. lobbyist right now.
That's me.
Okay, great. I saw that on Democratic Underground.
That, yes. In fact, now that I've got the soapbox alert up, I've posted over to the discussion group. And, you know, we're just looking for, you know, the more names I have for any given senator, the better it is. And the more likely that, you know, I may be able to get a little bit of time with staff. I think that one of the key things that we often aren't able to do in one-way communication is directly challenge the rationalizations they have for not acting.
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, when you can sit and speak to them, you can say why, you know, some people are telling us it's because they think there'll be a backlash, and then you have, you know, there's plenty of arguments against that. But until you're really sort of in a dialogue, very often a lot of what we're saying can roll off their backs, although... Sheer volume is critical as well.
Well, that's true. And something I heard Tom Hartman say earlier today that is incredibly valid. We do ourselves no service, Patty, if we simply write off the Republicans in the Senate, because Lindsey Graham has come out, you know, despite the sleazy things he said about this particular scenario, Lindsey Graham has come out and said that, you know, he's concerned about this national security issue. Arlen Specter has said the same thing. We must at least attempt a dialogue with these people.
And it's critical that we do contact our, no matter how hopeless you think your Republican senator is, we need to begin to take back the belief, the notion that we're founded on, and they represent us. And what happens is because Democrats feel that my hopeless senator will never listen to me, they don't contact them, and then those senators can get up on the floor and say, nobody in my district wants me to do whatever.
Precisely.
No, so we need to contact them if only to prevent them, make it them have to lie about nobody wanting.
And you know what, Patty, you bring up a great point because, and I hate to say this, but I smell a little bit of mendacity in the words of my senator, a man I thought I could trust, a man named Robert Byrd.
And, you know, Byrd, you've got an interesting – he has never been a fan of filibusters.
He hasn't.
As much as he has, you know, is a wonderful parliamentarian and makes use of Senate rules to his own advantage at times. He is not a fan of the filibuster, and at least he is taking a morally consistent position of saying, I will vote yes on the floor and I will vote no on the filibuster. What other senators are doing and what we've been trying to point out to them is that you cannot say that you oppose someone and at the same time pave their way to the appointment. And if they vote against, if they vote to close debate, they're paving the way for Alito. And to believe that you can then, if the vote gets to the floor, vote no on Alito. I mean, that there is... There's no moral...
Well, that's weaselly. I mean, that is nothing but pure weaselism.
Well, and it is hypocritical and immoral. I mean, you know, we need to call it what it is. It is not being a weasel. It's not being political. It is being immoral.
That, too. What we call it here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia is closing the barn door once the horses are gone.
And you know, so in a sense, because he opposes filibusters as sort of a general proposition, and because I think Robert Byrd is a fairly moral man, that he came out saying that he would vote yes on the floor struck me as at least he was being consistent.
Patty, there is some consistency there. However, I read his full statement on the internet at his webpage, byrd.senate.gov. And he gets down into it, and he says that everybody who contacted him about this proceeding has used one of two words or both words, and that is outrage and disgrace. And then he goes on, Patty, to talk about how he's received all of these letters written on personal stationery or lined paper, and he talks about how it was probably written while watching TV or while at the dinner table. And frankly, that is the part where I realized that he was buying himself a little bit of cover, because frankly, that stationery, he talks about it being mailed to him. It couldn't have happened. It takes 6 weeks to get a letter through to a member of Congress now.
They're crazy, you know, anthrax
check. Right. So, I mean, so you see what I'm getting at. In order for him to have received these letters, I mean, if they all came to him the Thursday when he made his announcement, or Friday when he made his announcement, if they all came to him that day, that meant they would have been mailed before Christmas.
Yeah, or they were dropped off in bulk by, you know, friends of the family or something.
Friends of James Dobson is what we're really talking about here.
The way that you may want to have, you know, folks approach Byrd is, although, you know, certainly trying to enlighten him as to the error of his support for Alito, although it is sort of morally consistent to vote yes on the floor and vote to end debate.
Right.
That is a consistency
is what it is.
What you can't do is vote to end debate and then turn around and think that they can make an empty vote of no on the floor. Because they essentially said, this guy can go to the court. Oh, now I'm voting against him. And that's the core inconsistency that we must prevent these people from doing, because we know that we have more than 41 votes against him. What we don't have is more than 41 votes for the filibuster.
For the filibuster.
And, you know, we need to make it crystal clear to members of the Senate that supposedly represent us, we will not tolerate that hypocrisy. We will not tolerate an empty vote of, you know, if you're going to vote against the filibuster, you're going to vote to end debate so that the vote, you know, everything's over.
Cloture.
And if you're going to do that, then you better vote yes on the floor, because you have paved the way for Alito. And once you've paved the way for him, the only morally consistent vote would be yes. You can't try to give yourself some sort of cover that, oh, I voted no against him, if you did not vote no against cloture.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Let me ask you a question, Patty. Do you have a central issue for which the Alito nomination is particularly troublesome for you, or is he just sort of a one size fits all repugnant?
No. It's I I think that to some degree we make a mistake by trying to focus on, you know, he's too conservative or he's this or that. The fact is that the notion that there is a theory of a unitary authoritarian executive.
It drives me crazy.
Well, in the United States is lunacy. It's lunacy. And they try to hide behind this notion that, oh, it's complex. Oh, you know, we must stop taking this fascist view of the law. Our will, the intent of the people, trumps law.
In every instance, you're absolutely right. It does.
Oh, it when the intent of the law somehow, cynical misuse of the quotes, twisting technicality like they did in Florida, every Republican in Florida in 2000 knew that more people went to the polls to vote for Gore. They knew it.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. Anyone who knew that more voters went to the polls to vote for Gore would have, you know, once again, I get to moral.
It keeps being a moral issue, and I am so grateful to you for framing it in that way.
And instead of that, they try to rely on legalisms and legal technicality to say, oh, but those votes didn't count. Well, no, they did count.
You know, when Pat Buchanan comes out and says, listen, I know who lives in Palm Beach County, and I know they didn't vote for me. You know, yeah, it becomes a moral issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what is so frustrating is that the same thing is happening with members of the press with regard to this notion that there is a theory that we have a dictator in America. I mean, when you put it the way that, you know, Alito subscribes to the theory that America has a dictator.
Yes, he does.
Now that, you know, that's like saying Alito subscribes to a theory that the sky is green.
Yeah, and let's be clear with the because we may I run across this from time to time because I do speak in such plain language, Patty. When we say dictator, you can say that in a sort of morality neutral way. Alito believes in an executive who literally has the power to dictate what the statutes passed by Congress mean and do not mean, and what statutes passed by Congress he will obey and which ones he will not. That is literally the definition of one who dictates the law within, you know, within the meaning of ancient Greek and Roman history, where that whole concept first arose.
Oh, and you don't even need to reach to prove the insanity of his position. The media has been relentlessly telling us that, oh, Alito escaped having to answer any questions. Well, one of the questions that he escaped, and many of the questions that he escaped answering, required him to put some sort of limit on executive power. And when he failed to answer, and I think the what's emblematic is Biden's question that if the Congress passed a resolution, you know, and Congress is our voice. So if the people passed a resolution that we will not attack Iraq in any way, shape, or form for 6 months. We pass that resolution. Can the president bomb Iraq the following day? And Alito
Iran.
Alito said that, well, he couldn't answer it. You know, his typical, I can't know until it comes. It depends. You know, if it can't, well, there is no depends. You don't even need a high school diploma, much less a legal degree, to know that in America, that we give no one authority to trump our will, and that the only way that a fascist gets authority is by deception or by force.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is no constitutional democracy in which you give anyone that level of power, and you don't need a law degree to know this.
No, this is blue smoke and mirrors. This is the kind of thinking that comes from the same group of people, Patty, who say that we're going to allow more toxins into the atmosphere, and in so doing, we're going to call that the Clear Skies Initiative, or that we're going to cut down more trees in more national forests, and we're going to call that the Healthy Forest Initiative. It's Orwellian, and it's also a manifestation of a dictatorial mindset.
Well, and the tragic part of it is that people are intimidated by the law, and they you know, over the course of years, we have been trained to be intimidated by the law, and it's like, oh, constitutional law is even more complex. Well, no, not really. Constitutional law is actually fairly simple.
Of all the branches of American law, it is probably when you're talking about the base level stuff, it is probably among the most simple. And that's another one of these things that drives me crazy. I don't know if you followed it or not, but I followed what we call Sunday Justice Sunday 1, 2, and 3. Started back with the Terry Schiavo matter, and we keep hearing about this business of, oh, we need strict constructionists who will follow the original intent of the framers. If you're following the original intent of the framers, Patty, the first thing you do is you read the plain language of the Constitution. If you have to do things like in talking about presidential powers, if you have to say things like, well, when it says that he shall be commander-in-chief of the armed forces, that means he has the power to bomb children. If you're reading it into that, you are no longer a strict constructionist of the Constitution.
Well, and one of the sort of short messages that hopefully is, you know, maybe is getting through, or that I'll certainly be saying when I talk to any member of staff tomorrow, is that a vote for Alito is agreeing that Bush can attack in defiance of Congress, that Bush can order an attack on any nation he wants in direct defiance of Congress. When you vote for Alito, you're voting for that. And that's, you know, and then if they come back and say, well, I'm going to vote against him on the floor, no. You can't get away with saying no on the floor if you oppose him. Then you must do everything in your power to prevent him from getting on the court. And that's all, you know, that's, it seems so self-evident to us that I'm going to be very interested when I actually hopefully am able to have even a brief conversation with a couple folks down there.
And Patty, when do you...
why, how can they think that's not self-evident? You know what I mean? There has to be some crazy rationalization that we can tear apart.
And those are operative words. And I don't think you're stretching the meaning of those words. Crazy. I mean, you have got to engage in legalistic, sophistic, mental and legal and linguistic gymnastics to even get to a point where you begin to defend that position. Let me ask you, what time do you get on the train?
5:46, and I actually should be kind of getting my...
Yeah, let me roll on if you don't mind. What a great conversation, and what a great effort on your part. Let's let people know again, if you want to get a message to any particular staffer, any particular representative in Congress, you need to send an email to thedeanpeople@comcast.net.
Yes.
And give a name, give an address, a zip code. I know. I get the "What's your zip code?" all the time when I call Congress.
They definitely. I guess I have. I've said name and address, and I've assumed that would include zip code. That's pretty much the minimum that they require. And you know, as I bring sort of a list of here I am for these people.
Are you taking a laptop with you so that you can roll with this as you go?
And to some degree, I'll have limited capability of printing. So I will, of course, be trying to, you know, messages will be getting through to me, and I will be trying to get to as many senators as I possibly can. Messages that reach me or get sent before, like, 11 a.m. are probably the most likely to get through to the senator. As you pointed out, hopeless Republicans, I am more than happy to go to them and, at a minimum, lobby them to oppose the nuclear option.
Yes.
And with regard to Byrd, if I do get some folks, you could give me your name and address. If I do get some folks from West Virginia, the approach that I might take with Byrd is, of course, trying to elicit the rationalizations, what are their reasons, see if I can challenge them. But if push comes to shove and he's just not going anywhere, I think that asking for him to abstain.
Exactly. Or, you know, here's a nice thing for an 87-year-old senator to do on a Monday afternoon. Go over to Walter Reed. He opposed this war. He opposed going to war. Byrd did. He needs to go over and let these soldiers know at Walter Reed that people who oppose the war do not oppose them. There's a great thing to do Monday afternoon.
And part of the argument is, and I haven't watched him as close. I mean, I know certain things about him over the years, but you are much more aware whether this would fly with him or not, but. Giving the president his victory for the State of the Union is if Byrd would appreciate delaying the, you know, if he's saying, oh, the confirmation's inevitable, whatever he's thinking, saying, well, let's at least not give the president his, you know, you can abstain and still have a perfectly consistent position of intending to vote yes on the floor, but that you want to allow your colleagues to have their say for longer, because you think that there has been things that haven't been said about Alito, and you're simply voting either against ending debate or abstaining from voting to end debate because you believe that your colleagues have a right to continue debate because they still believe that things have not been aired. And that's perfectly consistent with intending to vote yes on the floor.
Well, I tell you what, Patty, I do want to let you get going so you can do what you got to do. More than Byrd, the question I'm getting, and I have no answer for, the question I'm getting the most is, where in heaven's name is John D. Rockefeller IV? He has been under the radar this entire time, to the best of my knowledge. So it could well be that a little door knocking at his office might bear more fruit than any time you spend at Senator Byrd's.
Oh, and this is, you know, stopping in with staff, and it can go either very fast or you can get bogged down somewhere. So I'm definitely going to be prioritizing.
Right.
And Byrd is probably somewhat lower on the list than, you know, trying to nail down Maria Cantwell. But
right.
I'm not going to visit people unless I actually have the name of a constituent that I can walk through the door and say, I'm representing this person. Here is their key message. And then, you know, may I have a little bit of time with member of staff to understand, you know, what the senators, what will go into the senators the decision.
And exactly.
Perhaps we can help inform it. Anyway.
Good luck. Enjoy the ride. You know what? Paul Revere did it on a horse. You're riding a train. Patty, thank you so much, and travel safely. Godspeed.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Man, I love to see committed action. This is what our side is good at. We have, in a way, we've been hypnotized, we've been mesmerized into believing that only the right wing can mobilize. But that's not so.
Hello.
I mean, we invented this stuff. Well, I was 8 in the 60s, and as a consequence, we need to find that center again. And frankly, we need to prove that the religious wrong, or what I call the religion industry, isn't the only people It's 19 minutes till 4 in the East Coast. Never mind the verb tense. That James Dobson, Falwell, Robertson, this crowd aren't the only ones who know how to mobilize people. I happened to be flipping across the TV earlier today. What do I see this last night? What do I see? I see Pat Robertson doing a funding drive where he had already raised $800,000 for miracles. For miracles. Here's the miracle he's raising money for. Of course, this is the big lie he won't tell the little old ladies who are sending the Social Security checks. That miracle that is political action. Political action, pure and simple. Let's go to the phones. Spike is calling from Easton, PA. Hey, Spike, you're head on. Or, no, you're not. You're on the filibuster. My bad. It's early.
Hey, Gonzo, greetings. Well, you got the head on phone number, so it's a little, I think, a little confusing also. How's it going down there in West Virginia?
You know, I'm awake. So, you know, we're taking our victories where we find them.
Well, I had to laugh when you said you're up early. It isn't so much you're up early as much as you're up really, really late, more or less.
Well, no, I cheated. I got a nap, so I'm calling this up early.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, if anything else, I mean, you know, I've been raving how great this filibuster-thon has been all weekend. But, you know, you're kind of the guy that deserves a lot more kudos than maybe, you know, I mean, you got some, but way back when, there's a few streams now, but for probably the first 48 hours of this thing, the only stream was the video stream from the Turks, and quickly their site was becoming overwhelmed with all the people trying to use it. And I have a dial-up connection, and you kind of helped me out and everyone out there with dial-up connections who just wanted to get the audio.
Credit where credit is due, Spike. People need to know that you're the one who contacted me and said, hey, can you do something with this? And I'm such a technological Luddite. I was looking at that video going, ain't no way I'm getting video to Ben Birch at White Rose. And then I thought, wait a minute, he's after the audio. And, yeah, that's how that happened. So never mind the kudos to me. Kudos to you.
Well, yeah, I was just being selfish. I just wanted to hear the stream. But certainly it's great to see just everybody just totally coming together at this. I mean, we got a couple people who are in conflicting time slots who have all come together for this. And like I you know, I said a million times, I'll say it a million more. You know, it's great everyone put the petty differences aside for the most part. And pretty much everybody in progressive radio for the most part got together and supported this thing. And, you know, I mean, certainly I'm not gonna be a jerk and call out the people who didn't get involved, because they probably have good reasons, many of them themselves. But I mean, you know, certainly it could have been easy for Tom Hartman to say, you know, I'm writing a book, I'm a little too busy right now to do it, or, you know, Mike Malloy, and
Yeah, well, bless Mike's heart. I mean, everybody who listens to my program knows that, you know, I sort of bow at Mike's shrine because I listen to him when we go off the air and I'm having my cocktail and decompressing and stuff so I can finally get to sleep. Mike couldn't even take phone calls. And he still found some way to be incredibly creative and engage people. And the reading of 1984, I thought, was sheer genius.
Well, you know, I was at the Soul game while he was on, so I actually missed that personally. But, you know, I got to say, I love Mike Malloy. I listen to him a lot. He was the first progressive talk show I ever called. And the funny thing about Mike sometimes is it's real easy for him to just kind of, he can go with something for so long and so well that there'll be times where you'll be sitting on the phone forever waiting to talk to him. And, you know, to be honest with you, that's really good, because that's really hard to be able to just keep flowing without, you know, eventually getting to the point where you have a brain fart and you're like, you know.
Yeah, so, I know exactly what you're talking about.
He's got one sharp mind that just kind of, he just keeps it flowing and flowing and flowing. And many a times I've listened and I had to laugh, because he'll go on and he's like, geez, I've been going on for an hour now. Maybe I should start taking some calls. You know?
Well, I can tell you, it slips away from you. If you're trying in this business or the talk radio, conversation radio, Spike, if you're dealing with something with a lot of formatting, or you've got to hit hard breaks or something like that, it's absolutely maddening, because you want to give people a chance to talk. And I think that's one of the great things that the Young Turks have done with this. Nobody who's hosting has any sorts of real limitations on them. This is an opportunity for liberal America, progressive America, what I like to think of as right-thinking, decent America, to really, really have their say. And God knows this never happens on right-wing hate radio.
No. There's so much competition in right-wing radio. You know, they're all fighting to be in the talkers' top 10 list, you know.
Well, and they're amazingly taken with themselves, Spike. You know, the classic paradigm is, well, that's enough about me. Let's talk about me.
Yeah. You know, you get the rare few who admit the other one exists, you know, with, usually in the defense cases, like, you know, when Bill Bennett went and made his, Ku Klux Klan abortion remark. And, you know, the next day, I don't want to, don't take this the wrong way when I'm so so Irish. I have a 7 7/8 hat size. Basically, the biggest disgrace to the Irish culture of America, Sean Hannity. The next day, as an Irishman, him and O'Reilly are such embarrassments. I wish more people would realize Phil Donahue's an Irish American also.
Well, I got a little bit of it in me too, Spike, and heaven knows Agnes does as well. And I think O'Reilly and Hannity are both living proof of that old saw that an Irishman is never drunk so long as he can hang on to one blade of grass and not fall off the earth.
I think what O'Reilly and Hannity are a perfect example of is when you take too much shots at Jameson, things like that happen.
Yeah, it's called organic brain syndrome. Hey, yeah. Spike, great to hear from you. You know, burn up the phone lines if you get a chance. And, hey, look, thanks for being a patriot.
Hey, you know, no problem. Hey, thank you for, you know, like I said, for what you're doing, too, and especially considering the shift you got. I mean, this might be the toughest time to deal with because calls are probably going to become really tough at times, what everyone goes.
Well, that is when the night owls will hear what a filibuster sounds like. I can do it.
All right,
you
man,
take it easy, Spike. Bye now. Spike is a friend we made in the Tom Hartman chat room. Things cruising along nicely in there. That Tom Hartman chat room is a truly amazing place and a reminder of you got liberal friends, you got progressive friends that aren't participating in this process. Here's a phone number, here's a couple of websites where you can pick up the stream. Crystal1.net, and of course, YoungTurk.com, TheYoungTurk.com. The video stream is, I believe, there. Audio streams are available, tremendous, humongous capacity at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Don't let me mess up. WhiteRoseSociety.org/Kincaid. My name is spelled KINCAID.HTML. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, you know, put the cat on dial up. We got the room for you, okay? That's Agnes, and Agnes is the one you're talking to when you call in. Pat is calling on line 5 from San Diego. Hey, Pat, welcome to the filibuster.
Hi. I was wondering, are you not on video at all, are you?
No. I have a face made for radio.
Well, I was asking your wife whether you were related to the Kincaids and Spencer because I grew up in Spencer, West Virginia.
Wow. Who knew I was going to get this call? What happened is in 17, okay, this is where, you guys will enjoy this story. In about 1745, and this kind of goes to what we're doing tonight, the Kincaids were a group in, subgroup of some clan in Scotland, and they supported an uprising against the British crown. And a bunch of Kincaids, following that loss, had to leave Scotland.
Really?
Yeah. Part of them went to Northern Ireland. Another part of them came to the colonies. The Kincaids in Spencer, West Virginia, to whom you are related, went to Northern Ireland first.
Cool.
The Kincaids to whom I'm related went to Augusta County, Virginia, on a little area called the Calf Pasture River. I got to go find that place. It sounds so pastoral.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not related to them, but I grew up in this town, and so we're all like family. I'm very puzzled by Robert Byrd, and I'm very heartbroken. I've been admiring him for so long, and I was considering that I think he may not realize that he's being lied to by the media. Like, I saw this kind of behavior before from Mark Dayton, the senator from Minnesota, where he seemed, if you remember, and I don't know if you saw the Condoleezza Rice hearings or the confirmations for her.
I did.
Of course, she was lying all over the place to our senators. And I think Senator Mark Dayton must have known the truth at that point. which he had gotten not from the administration but from reading some article. And so it seemed like it, he suddenly realized what this band of traitors has been doing by lying to them, because he gave one of the, I mean, he was just fabulous. And also for this confirmation hearing, he gave an excellent presentation. And I wanted to steer people to his presentation, which is on his webpage, because it has all of the points that are what make Alito such a bad person to put into our Supreme Court. And I thought they could be used for folks who are looking for the exact reasons why he's so bad.
And that's
Mark Dayton.
Is that dayton.senate.gov?
Well, if in the URL all you put is Mark Dayton, Dayton, Yahoo will find it for you.
Okay.
But it is dayton.senate.gov.
Okay. Let me back up with you just for a moment, Pat. You mentioned being feeling so disheartened over what Byrd did. You're a hillbilly in exile. And you know that you would be surprised how many there are. But a lot of people who aren't here don't know what went down in the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah, about the mine?
No, not about the mine. Radio ad buys were made by the same people, and these people are tied in together with the Tony Perkins Group, the American Family Association. They're also tied in with the James Dobson Focus on the Family people. They have enough money to set fire to a soaking wet God Almighty, okay?
Yes.
And what they did is they bought advertising time on little radio stations, big radio stations, primarily talk radio stations all over the state of West Virginia. And they said, and I quote, "Tell Senator Byrd to vote like a West Virginian and not to vote like that liberal Ted Kennedy."
Oh, my goodness.
And that is where Robert Byrd is getting the cover to do what he is doing.
You think it's a cover because the help to minors is being threatened by this administration, or why do you think he needs cover?
Well, Pat, he's operating from a position of weakness. And this is not conspiracy theory. I mean, there's no black helicopters outside my house right now. This is what happened. On the day that floor debate on Alito opened, several people came to the floor, both Republican and Democrat alike, to either praise him or decry him.
Uh-huh.
Robert Byrd came to the floor of the Senate to talk about mine safety issues. He was deliberately not talking. I mean, this was time reserved for talking about Alito.
Right.
He came and talked about mine safety. Now, what happened is... I think Thursday, that was when he made his announcement. On Thursday, a man named John Racey, is a multimillionaire Republican media mogul here in West Virginia. He owns a string of radio stations. He owns the in-state West Virginia statewide radio network. He owns the satellite consortium that broadcasts Mountaineer football and Mountaineer basketball, and even provides uplink sources for Marshall University football and basketball. I mean, that man declared his candidacy for the Republican nomination for Senate in West Virginia, and it wasn't hours later that suddenly Robert Byrd announced his support for Samuel Alito. So, yes, it is cover.
I see. Okay. Well, so is there some way that you think he can be dissuaded, or he's just totally lost the vote?
I have not given up. When I heard about it, I wasn't mean. I'm the soul of propriety. I called his office and I talked to one of his staffers, and I told his staffer what my father, who is 81 years old and a veteran of the Second World War, had said about it, and shared that with, and the lady was like, "Oh my God, I can't, this is horrible." And
So you believe it's strictly that it's like blackmail rather than...
This is pure and simple blackmail.
It's not that he's unaware of what the threat is to the democracy.
No, it's not that. It's not that at all. If you go to bird.senate.gov, you can read his statement regarding Alito, and it's full of a lot of happy hooey about the separation of powers and yada yada yada.
But you don't think he was fooled, just fooled by the PR and by the ads and by the newspaper coverage,
no,
and the TV coverage?
No, I absolutely do not, because one of the things, and this is something he said a month ago about Alito, he said, I sat down with him and he understands how important religious freedom is, and he understands that I believe that the court has gone too far in curtailing our religious liberties. Yeah, Bird said that.
Well, you never know how to take that. I mean, you know, what they claim religious freedom is obviously the opposite. It's
yeah. So, no, he understands how dire the consequences are. What I'm focusing my efforts on right now is trying to get if he's gonna hurt our party on the cloture vote, then I think the best, like I said, talking to Patty, the best thing that he can do is to go to Walter Reed Hospital and visit some recovering veterans of this war that he did such an excellent job of pointing out the foolhardiness of. You know, lead follower, get out of the way. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see. You're suggesting he go do that instead of being there for the vote.
Yes, that he simply absent himself from the Senate.
Yeah. Well, I obviously have no pull anywhere in the state. I don't know anybody there. You know, all I can do is send letters, just like everybody else.
Well, now you know somebody here. So you know, you can feel free to share your thoughts via email anytime. Bob@headonradio.com. We like to think that we're a little connection back to the hills, because don't give up, but I would suggest
I mean, we will just continue to send the messages and try to deluge all of the senators with our messages,
right? And bear in mind, if you call a Senate office and you either get a busy signal or a voicemail, and typically what's been happening is we've been working so hard at this issue that what you get is the voicemail, and then it says the voicemail box is full. Don't give up there. You can, if you can't get through at the Washington office, you can almost always get through at the local offices, usually in the state capital of whatever given state you're dealing
right.
with.
Right, right. Okay. Well,
thank you very kindly.
Much.
And what a pleasure talking to you. Great
pleasure
to make your acquaintance.
To you.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
With regard to Senator Byrd, I'm not blowing smoke at you. The timing was just too close. He waited until he found out if he was going to have meaningful opposition, and then he made his statement. And of course, the thing that remains to be seen is where he will stand if the Republicans like to go what they call nuclear, or shall we say nuclear. Because then he's going to see the traditions and prerogatives of his cherished United States Senate trounced all over, pure and simple. Let's see. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff is calling from Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff. Welcome
Hi,
to the filibuster.
Bob. Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good.
You know, it's been a really long weekend.
Yes, it has.
And a really tough weekend. But I got to say, trying to follow up the calls from Patty and Spike, it's going to be tough.
Great. You know, Jeff, that's a great point, because across the board in liberal talk, whether it's the Young Turks, whether it's me, Mike Malloy, all the gang at Air America, Tom Hartman, Peter Werby, Peter Collins, in a great sense of uniformity, what we get on this side is some of the best, smartest callers in the world. There's none of this sycophancy that you get when you listen to right wing radio, and it is absolutely refreshing.
Yeah, well, one good thing that's come out of this weekend is I talked to my sister in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her Daniel LaConca is sitting on the fence, and he needs some input to, you know, to make a decision. And, you know, she's got a pretty good, you know, group of friends around there that I think can turn him around. And my parents are both octogenarians. They don't have a lot of friends out there, but they're still both pretty active.
Right.
And if we can take.
Well, let me ask you real quick, Jeff. Have you heard where Senator Inouye is?
No, I haven't.
Because I was under the impression that he was leaning toward no on the filibuster, and frankly that's one that just makes my head hurt. This man was interned in an American concentration camp at the beginning of World War II, and only got out to be able to go and fight in the Second World War. He is a supremely decorated World War II veteran, and for Senator Inouye to vote either yes on cloture or yes on Alito strikes me as just mind-boggling, because Alito would grant the kind of power to the executive that results in concentration camps.
Well, that's a good point. I got to pass that along to my sister and see if she can, you know, get him to turn his head around.
I frankly don't know where he is, but that's part of the process. It's like Senator Rockefeller. This is the great winnowing. This is the separation of the wheat from the chaff. This is the time that we find out who is willing to stand and be counted in the name of the American Republic.
Yep, it's time to stand and fight or be torn down.
Exactly. You know, and there's no dress rehearsal on this. This is it. You know, we're inside at this point we are at 12 hours and about 27 minutes or 12 hours and 17 minutes before that vote on cloture is taken. I said it at the beginning of the program, this is where the rubber meets the road.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, good to hear from you, and call your sis, talk to your parents, let them, anybody, I mean, talk on the street, talk at the grocery stores, talk at the gas pump. We can remain silent no longer.
I'll be the crazy guy talking to anything that moves.
Well, you know, it's not, and the nice thing is it's not so crazy anymore, Jeff, because half of America's walking around with an earbud from their telephone looking like they've got some sort of personality disorder, just screaming at the sky. So, you know, yeah, you'll blend right in.
Absolutely. I don't even have an MP3 player or wireless telephone or cordless telephone or any of that. It's all behind me.
All right. Well, Jeff, you take care.
Take care.
Bye now. I should remind you the phone number again, because it is different from what the Young Turks have been using through the course of this process. It is 877-443-2366. And like I said, for these 3 hours, we're paying the freight. We're coming up on 14 minutes past the hour of 4 a.m. here on the East Coast. 14 past 1 for those of you on the West Coast. My name is Bob Kincaid, and it is my pleasure and it is my honor to share in this. I don't believe in hyperbole, but this is a monumental undertaking. It absolutely is. Let's go to, Agnes, have a little help here.
Pat in San Diego.
No, I already talked, no, we had, no.
We have another Pat.
Oh, okay, line 5. Okay. Hi, welcome to the filibuster.
Hi, this is Bonnie McFadden from Hawaii.
Oh, okay, Donna,
thank you.
You were
just talking about Senator Inouye?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, he definitely was interned.
Yes, he was.
And I just sent him an email linking to a press release by Halliburton Company, Cheney's firm, and Halliburton's subsidiary, KBR, has just gotten a contract to build detention facilities in the United States.
What?
Yes, and it was there was a diary in it about it on Daily Cost today.
I missed that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. This is, you know, this is no joke that Alito might play a very important role in deciding whether those detention facilities are legal or not, and whether the detention of U.S. citizens is legal or not.
This ties in so terrifyingly well with the information that came out last week, and we talked about it a little bit on my program. I'm sure the Turks hit it as well. The House of Representatives version of the Patriot Act reauthorization contains the creation of something called the United States Secret Service Uniformed Division. And if you wade through the gobbledygook and the mumbo jumbo, you get down there and you find out that they will have warrantless arrest powers for crimes not committed in their presence. Almost every cop, dear heart, I think you just hung up on Donna. Yeah, you did. Donna, I'm so sorry, dear. Call us back if you wish. But just to finish up, the Uniform Secret Service Division, every cop has the ability to arrest someone who commits a crime in their presence without a warrant. I mean, if you're going to have a police force, you kind of got to give them that power. But this Uniform Division of the Secret Service also has written into their enabling legislation the ability to arrest for felonies not committed in their presence and to do so without a warrant. That should absolutely scare the life out of any civil libertarian. I mean, this is the kind of thing. Even Bob Barr, and Bob Barr, I wouldn't have thrown a warm bucket of spit on if he was on fire during the Clinton impeachment proceedings. But he's come around and he realizes we are talking about the creation of an imperial presidency here. Is Donna back with us?
Yes.
Donna, I'm so terribly sorry.
That's fine, no worries.
I don't know if you heard any of that, but what you said about the possibility of the creation of American concentration camps fits so perfectly with this idea of
they're actually starting to build them.
That's unacceptable. That is absolutely unacceptable. Of course, we're not going to be told where, when, how, or why, are we?
Well, there is something in the press release that talks about an influx of immigrants or a national emergency or other new programs is the wording. Other new programs being, very likely the arrest and detention of American citizens.
That sends chills down my spine.
Yeah, these guys are real fascists. They're not fooling around.
Can it possibly get any more critical that we stop Alito? Because in conjunction with John Roberts and Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, maybe Kennedy comes on board, and the next thing, rubber stamp. I was raised. My dad is real particular, and he's always said, son, you bow to no one. You are an American citizen. You are equal to everyone. Everyone on earth you're equal to, and everyone is equal to you. And I refuse, I absolutely refuse, Donna, to bow a knee of fealty to any American politician who sets himself up as Lord God Almighty over us all.
Well, it's definitely happening, and Alito is definitely part of the machinery that's going to keep Bush Republicans in power, even if Bush himself isn't there anymore. Bush has been a puppet of the neoconservatives.
Without a doubt.
They'll find another one.
Sure they will.
And but you know, from my standpoint, and I don't know if you share this or not, Donna. I don't want a Democratic president to have the kind of powers that they're talking about giving out at this juncture.
Right. Yeah. One thing that might give them pause is suppose Hillary Clinton were to be president and to have all this power. Would they approve of it then?
Exactly. Well, that's the kind of thing. The very idea of a Hillary Clinton presidency is the kind of thing that makes really hardcore right-wing nuts wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night and run out in the backyard and start shooting watermelons to try to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster.
Right, exactly. The problem is I don't think they have any intention of giving up power. We saw that two elections in a row, presidential elections, they, first of all, the Supreme Court, by one vote, gave us George Bush as president when he didn't win either the popular vote or the Florida vote. The second was the Ohio fraud was just massive. I went to Ohio to help with the fraud lawsuit that was filed there. And the varieties of ways that the Republicans used to manipulate the vote was just astounding. I didn't know they had that much creativity. Between not delivering voting machines to precincts, between telling Democratic voters that they were supposed to vote on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, between kicking people off the polls, registers who had been on the registers for years and actively voting.
Yes.
And then the machines, the electronic machines on top of all of that.
And something as simple as placing two precincts inside one room.
Right.
That amazed me. You got all these booths, you got two precincts in one room, you walk into the wrong booth, and the next thing you know, you've got a challenged vote, and you've just been disenfranchised. I first became acquainted with Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com, who covered the 3 hours prior to me, in his excellent work exposing the fraud and corruption in Florida. He was the first one who put me onto the story of Clinton Curtis. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I know who he is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the whole story of him writing that program at the behest of the Republican Speaker of the Florida House, who's now in Congress, and getting away with creating a computer program that would allow people to maliciously and absolutely surreptitiously manipulate a vote inside a Diebold touchscreen machine just made me want to scream. And I found out yesterday, that here in my county in West Virginia, and it happened with virtually no notice, no public comment at all. We've got a mix of Diebold machines and ES&S optical scanners. And
wow.
I absolutely refuse to vote on one of those things.
Well, one possibility is to recommend that people send in absentee ballots.
That is what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to be doing.
There's a paper trail of a written absentee ballot.
The sad thing with that, though, Donna, I don't know how the law is where you are, but absentee ballots are the last things counted here in West Virginia, and sometimes if the margin is greater than the amount of absentee ballots cast, they don't count them at all.
Right, and that's happened all over, that the absentee ballots were not counted.
It's a terrifying situation, but what you bring up about Halliburton building camps, and let's face facts, they're for us.
There's no question.
Yeah.
At least there's no question in my mind. I mean, they have destroyed all of our not all of them, but they're working on them. The Fourth Amendment is completely gutted by this complete disregard for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act requirements of getting a warrant from a judge for all domestic surveillance. They're completely ignoring that, and they admit it.
Yes.
They're detaining people without charging them, keeping them in brigs for years without bringing them to trial. It's totally contrary to the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which says that everyone has a right to due process of law, to be charged, and to be taken given a public trial.
And to confront their accuser?
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Donna, so good to talk to you. I'm sorry we hung up on you the first time. It's early. And please,
no
please keep up your good work. Wear out your senators out there. And, you know, don't hesitate to call some other ones.
Oh, no, I've been doing a lot of that. and then I started sending faxes when their mailboxes were full.
Right. And if you and by the way, if you want to send a fax to Senator Byrd, here's my suggestion. He went through a lot of happy hooey on his statement about Alito, talking about how he got these, like I said, he got these letters with on lined paper and personal stationery, and it's physically impossible for him to have gotten them. So if you want to fax him, fax it to him on lined paper. I would suggest, but he said it was written at the while watching television or at the dining room table. You know that little brown ring that the coffee cup makes when you set it down on something? Before you fax it, set a coffee cup on it. You know, a little a gravy stain, a jam stain, something. You know, give it a real patina of just middle class American values.
It certainly will. Right. That's a great idea.
Donna, you take care, and what a pleasure making your acquaintance.
Thank you for all the work you're doing. Thank you very much.
Have a great morning.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye. Morning, night. Yeah, it may not even be today yet in Hawaii. Let's see, line one, Madeline. Madeline,
yes.
Thank you for holding on so long. I do appreciate you taking time to make contact.
That's fine. I just mainly wanted to let every one of you guys know how much I appreciate all the work that you are doing, and especially the Young Turks for getting this started. I just think it's great, and we need so much more of this.
We absolutely do. And like I said, I think this is the birth of something magnificent. We now have a network in place where we can, for critical issues, we can come together for stuff. We can come together beyond Alito, because there's going to be another fight down the road.
I agree.
Yeah, we've got these Democrats out there that say that they want to keep the powder dry. I don't know what it's worth keeping dry for after Alito, but I suspect this is not the last fight.
Well, I suspect you're right. I hope it's not the last fight. I hope that our representatives will at least start fighting for the American people.
It would be a nice change at this point.
Yes, I am so tired of the lying that goes on. It's just, I've never seen it this bad ever in my entire lifetime. And I do appreciate these people like yourself and others that are getting out there. I don't even watch regular television anymore. I just literally don't watch it.
I occasionally tune into the History Channel, maybe the Food Network once in a while. Occasionally I'll take my anti-emetic medication to keep me from throwing up, and I'll watch CNN and just go and see what the goons are saying on Fox. You're absolutely right. I even watch C-SPAN on my computer now.
Now, see, I can't get C-SPAN here. I used to get it where I used to live, but I can't get it here. And I really miss C-SPAN, because that way you got to see the idiots in action.
And it is stunning to behold sometimes.
Oh, it's disgusting. I mean, they have the mental capacity of a 4-year-old about half the time.
And I think sometimes that the big money that they get to play around in there somehow, it sucks IQ points off of them. I have been amazed, Madeline, absolutely stultified, to watch the gymnastics that Barack Obama has engaged in. This guy gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention.
That was wonderful.
About the audacity of hope.
Yeah.
And now we're getting civics lessons about how procedural moves to win in the Senate are somehow less viable or less honorable than winning with it's like he's bitten on the right wing talking point about the up or down vote. If I hear up or down vote again, Madeline, I think I'm going to get sick.
I agree. I am so sick of the apologetics. You know, we need to stand up for what's right. And our representatives need to stand up for what's right, not for what's in their own best ego's interest, but for what's actually right for our country.
I agree wholeheartedly. Madeline, what a pleasure making your acquaintance. Please stick with the filibuster. The Young Turks, Cenk and Jilly will be back here in another hour and a half or so. And, you know, use that phone. Wear it out. Do not let these senators have any sort of an understanding that we are a quiet or pacified people any longer.
Well, thank you very much.
Have a great morning.
Have a good evening and have a good day.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see, rolling on to Karen in Oakland, California. Karen, thanks for filibustering with us.
Well, thank you, Bob, and I just am delighted to hear more of us old farts getting on to the Young Turks and belying the idea that this is just a bunch of kids again. I went through that in the 68 election, and the you know, the dismissal of our ideas, you know, is just happening all over again.
Yeah, you young whippersnappers, you just don't understand.
That's right. That's right. Let us tell you what it's really like.
I despise being lectured to by a senator or a member of the House of Representatives. I've had it makes
me nuts. I've
still
got my mama around. She can do that, but nobody else.
Exactly. Let me just mention that. I said something on my program some time back. This is a time for older Americans to take the torch back up. You know, I've mentioned my dad a couple of times. They thought he's in his 80s. They thought they were going to get to knock off, retire, enjoy a nice, peaceful, quiet retirement, golden sunset years, all of that business. Sorry. That's not the way it works out in 21st century America. We've got another fight on our hands.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's luckily us boomers are a fitter older group, and we can still keep up the fight.
And we have a lot to learn from you guys.
Oh.
You know, you invented a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's not really, but we you know, put our spin on it, you know, generations.
Yeah, you put the American stamp on it. We in the show we did for Martin Luther King Day, it blew me away to think of, you know, that man was murdered when he was 39 years old. You know, he would be an elder statesman at this point. Who knows? Perhaps a past president.
Well, in 68, I thought he was an elder statesman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, the neat thing about being on hold all this time and listening to this sort of 15-second lead before what I'm listening to on the net catches up, most of the things I wanted to say have been said by others. I do want to add my just feeling of absolute horror to that you expressed about these detention centers and on American soil. Would have thought we had gotten that figured out after the last time. And as you said, it makes the response from the Hawaiian senators even more puzzling. But the other thing is that you brought up that I want to, you know, echo is that the senators on the Judiciary Committee are, you know, a handful compared to the full Senate.
Absolutely.
And to think that, you know, their grandstanding and blowhard self-aggrandizing speeches were a debate is ridiculous for anyone, and I would think it would be especially ridiculous for the Democrats who weren't on that committee and would like to make some statements. Well, they couldn't ask the question, so they've got to make statements and read information into the record. And you know, I want that in the Senate record, the things that this man has done in his judicial past and the things that are going on.
That's a very good point, Karen, because I think at this stage of the filibuster, we may be taking it for granted that everybody knows the monstrosities that this man Samuel Alito has engaged in, the Doe v. Grudy case.
the business with him sanctioning. I've got my lovely wife and I have three daughters, and she will say right off the bat and that anybody that tries to strip search one of them is going to do it literally over our dead bodies.
Oh, yeah.
And for Samuel Alito to say, eh, well, you know, that's where the drug dealers like to hide their stuff, in little girls' underwear. And the other thing that maybe some people don't understand, Karen, is that if you go and you read that Doe v. Grudy decision, what you're going to find is that Third Circuit decision, what Scalito, the dissent that he wrote was contrary to the findings of the rest of the court. Do you know who authored the majority opinion in that case?
No.
None other than Michael Skeletor Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security. Now, how far out of the mainstream is Samuel Alito when he can't even get on board with a right-wing freak like Chertoff? I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. Everything that George Bush loves about Samuel Alito is something that has come from a dissent. This we need to recognize, and senators need to recognize, Karen, that this guy is he's another Brownie. He's another Paul Bremer. He's another Tommy Franks. Bremer lost nearly $9 billion in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. For that, he was given the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Tommy Franks turned a deaf ear to General Shalakashvili when he said it's going to take 500,000 men to secure this country. They cashiered Shalakashvili. Bush gave Franks. Bush gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Brownie was an Arabian stallion judge and got rewarded with FEMA. This is just more of that. Samuel Alito is literally being rewarded by these neocons for being a screw-up. He is being rewarded for getting it wrong. Sorry, didn't mean to
push. Well, and for marching to the right of Attila the Hun. I mean, yeah, it's just, makes them have little happy feet. But, you know, and it's unbelievable that the beat just does not keep on and on and on about New Orleans and the rest of the Gulf Coast.
Well, we're gonna get more
of it. These are our people, and they're hurting. And they've been hurting for 5 months now. And, you know, the kind of people that can ignore that are the kind of people that think Samuel Alito is the second coming of something.
Second coming of Solon. That's the way they treat him. And this is one of the things that really gets under my skin where New Orleans is concerned. When that case came out, and I can't remember the name of it right now, where those people were dispossessed in Connecticut by eminent domain.
Yes.
And since Kennedy, well, the majority was largely, frankly, the so-called liberal members of the court. What they were doing was upholding a congressional statute. They were not being so-called activist judges. They were. Or a state statute. They were honoring the intent of the legislative body. They were just interpreting and moving along. That's what these right wingers want them to do. And yet, in that case, they were vilified as destroying America. And as we speak, people's homes are being, or what's left of them, are being bulldozed in New Orleans. And the owners of that property, we're not talking about renters, we're talking about property owners, are simply having their property taken away from them without any kind, you know, at least the people in Connecticut got due process of law. The people in New Orleans aren't. But, you know, they're brown people, or, you know, they're not quite as white as George Bush is. And so, therefore, if we want to take their property, that's okay, and it's just another day in American history.
Yeah, well, they don't have enough green is the problem.
Well, okay, that too, yeah.
I mean, you know, that goes a long way toward obviating color in this outfit's mind, apparently. But I'll let you go. I just really thank you for what you're doing, and I think we can turn this around on the filibuster, and I think it's the beginning of a long, long haul. But from everything I've seen, the people are up for it.
Well, I'm up for this fight, and I will support anyone who pursues this fight, and that's inside the Senate, outside the Senate. I don't care.
Exactly.
Well,
all right.
Thank you very, very much. And it's been a pleasure making your acquaintance.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Good luck with you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, let's keep it rolling. I don't. I'm diatribing enough as it is. Let's see, Javier on line 3.
How you doing?
Doing great. Yourself?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I actually just woke up, so.
I did that myself a couple hours ago.
Yeah. I do want to thank you. I've been following this whole filibuster all weekend, and I know that Cenk and Jilly needed a break, so.
Well, I was initially scheduled to do what would have been 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern time. But it provided a more meaningful opportunity for them to, you know, what's the point in getting a break if it's only 3 hours long? So I'm happy to be here.
Right. Okay. Yeah, just a few points I wanted to touch on. One is a previous caller, you were talking about absentee ballots. And I can just say the district where I work in, where I actually was volunteering and counting votes, we counted the absentee ballots first. So.
Oh, really?
Pennsylvania. So, yeah. So we did it the right way, at least in my little district. So, for what it's worth.
Well, if they don't count mine at all here in West Virginia, Javier, I'm still going to do the absentee ballot because, you know, we're told that we get a paper trail on the D-bolds and the ES&S, but I've followed so much of Brad Friedman's work. There is no way that I can feel any sort of enfranchisement by participating in an electronic voting machine process.
I follow you, and but yeah, I've been contacting senators and been contacting my mom down in Florida, telling her to get in touch with Nelson, and my dad in West Virginia. So there you go.
Oh well, okay, great. So you're part hillbilly.
Yeah, part exactly. Yes. Yeah. So
all right, great.
So I've been telling him make sure to contact with your both your senators, Byrd especially, and I told him to make sure to mention the. You're probably familiar with this case, the RNS Services versus Secretary of Labor.
Yes.
Yeah, where he basically said that the coal processing plant isn't a mine, so the workers aren't entitled to any benefits.
Right, and people in Pennsylvania, that's coal country. Virginia is coal country. Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana, there are coal mines in Illinois. Tom Harkin reminded us not too long back. There are coal mines in Iowa. And as a consequence of that, anybody in those states, needs to be cognizant that if you don't want to see what happened to us at Sago number one, if you don't want to see what happened to us at Alma number one in Logan County, if that filled you with the horror that it filled us with here and filled the entire nation with, if you don't want to see that happen, Javier, you cannot let your senators support Samuel Alito, because again, with the unitary executive, let it happen.
it's terrible.
I mean, we didn't get, you know, Anderson Cooper didn't make it to West Virginia for the Alma number one fire because MSHA regs say that it's only a mining disaster if five or more people die.
Yeah.
So, you know, two is just a statistic. But in that particular instance, there was, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, you talk about the RNS case,
right.
And it's not really a mine. Well, 2 years ago, MSHA changed the regs, and you've got to have a mental picture of what a mine is like. There's not just one hole, okay?
Okay.
You've got air returns. You've got multiple holes into the ground to make sure that air circulates and make sure that you're able to pump the water out because, you know, water is a big issue in mining.
That makes sense.
Well, MSHA made a rule that said, mine owners, here's what you can do. You can put your conveyor belts that bring the coal out of the ground, you can put that in one of those fresh air returns. I'm not kidding.
The belt
that caught fire at the non-union mine in Logan County, West Virginia, and killed those two miners, the conveyor belt that caught fire, was placed in a fresh air return such that when that fire was caught, it didn't just smolder and burn and the smoke poured out of the hole. It was actively sucked into the mine. I've said before, there are no such things as mining accidents.
Every single injury, every single death that occurs in a mining situation is a direct and proximate result of the criminal negligence of someone in that mine management.
Yep.
And if we want to see more of it, by all means, we need Alito on the court.
It's terrible. And there was one other thing I wanted to touch on before letting you go and take more callers.
Sure.
Being here from Pennsylvania, of course, both of my senators are Republican, and of course you've got Santorum, of course, who everyone, at least everyone I know, really hates the guy and wants him out.
He's insane, Javier. No, I don't use that euphemistically. This is a guy, and you probably already know this.
Yeah, I know all about him.
He and his wife took their dead fetus, who was born as a result of a miscarriage. They took their dead fetus home and foisted it on their toddler children.
That's sick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's your baby brother. Can you imagine? Little 3-year-old kid and you're growing up. You get nightmares out of that.
Yeah.
And he did that. I mean, it's documented in the Washington Post. He's proud of it. He's got a picture in his office of him holding this little fetus in the palm of his hand.
He's done other things that he's proud of that just blow the mind.
Well, you know, he ripped off that school system in Western Pennsylvania with a grant for what, equipment or tuition or something, while he was sending his kids to school in suburban D.C. You know.
Yeah. Well, the point I wanted to make, which is, I guess, tangentially related to the filibuster, has to do with his you probably heard that he's not polling very well in the state right now.
Right. Bob Casey is giving him a...
He's right. Okay. But what I do have to say is that Bob Casey, who's kind of Republican light, has actually come out in favor of Alito.
I know. Why couldn't he keep his mouth shut?
Yeah, I know. But there are two other Democrats who are going to try to run against Bob Casey in the primary. I guess the Chuck Panaccio and Alan Sandals. And they've both come out in favor of the filibuster. And a recent Zogby poll done by opednews.com has shown that they both poll better than Santorum. And actually, when voters know where Bob Casey stands on the issues, both of them poll better than him. So there is hope.
Well, I hope the progressive and the liberal movement in Pennsylvania will get behind. The thing is, Sandals and Panaccio are both good people.
I agree, and
frankly, one should far be it from me to tell somebody their business, but they should get together, they should have lunch, and somebody should resign in favor of the other.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, Javier, please work that issue up there, and you know, don't give up on Specter. If he's as concerned as he lets on about this domestic spying business, then he has no business voting in favor of Samuel Alito.
Well, he's scared because they tried to take away his seat, you know.
Yeah, well, Santorum was actively involved in promoting that goon that ran against him in the Republican primary last time around. What was it, 2 years ago? Well, I tell you what, Javier, it's been an absolute pleasure making your acquaintance. And
it was a pleasure talking with you, and thank you again for doing what you're doing.
It is my honor.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. I'm not kidding about that. Whether it's in my regular show or what we're doing here, engaging in free speech and engaging in meaningful conversation about the state of the republic with my fellow Americans. And bear in mind, I'm kind of hardcore. I see these people that still have Bush stickers on their cars. There's not near as many as there used to be, but I see these people with Bush stickers on their car, and I just want to point and laugh. I don't feel like they are my fellow Americans. Sorry, I apologize. I am what I am. But what I'm getting to do this morning is absolutely the most energizing. Again, my show is ordinarily on the air about the same time as the Young Turks. I imagine so consequently, I'm really not a morning kind of guy. You know, I was when I did radio a long time ago. Hey, good morning, sunshine. How you doing? Freeways look like they're filled up fast. We got to Sorry. So this is my pleasure and my honor. Karen is with us calling from Ohio. Hey, Karen, welcome to the filibuster.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. I live in the congressional district of the infamous Mean Gene Schmidt.
Oh, God. Poor woman.
I know. I know. Well, she's running hard. She's holding like 3 meetings with constituents every day. Her biggest county of voters, Hamilton County, Ohio, her Republican cohorts refused to endorse her for the upcoming May 2nd primary.
Really?
Yes, and she's pretty mad about it. And, well, they were wise not to.
Well, you know, you say she's mad about it. I think of mad in terms of, you know, hydrophobia.
She's coming at the mouth.
Yeah, that business on the floor of the House had no business. There was no reason for that to go down. And she even, the guy that she quoted in that colloquy, in that exchange, he even hung her out to dry.
Well, he hung her out to dry because he's just as bad as she is. He's an Ohio State Representative. She called him Colonel Danny Bupp. Well, he's never seen a day of active service. He sure won't go over to Iraq.
Oh, no. Well, you know, that's for us to do, Karen.
I mean, it's not for Bush and Bush's friends and relatives. It's for us. It's for people of color. It's for people of not high incomes. Their lives are expendable for Bush's ideals.
Exactly. You know, if West Virginia here, you probably know, you're not that far from here. We have the highest, through American history, we have the highest per capita rate of service to the American military.
That's incredible.
And it's,
you're also from West Virginia, the home of Redhead from Fire Dog Lake.
Oh, really? I had no idea.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes.
Wonderful. I'll have to make contact.
I believe.
Really?
Yes.
We're everywhere.
She's one of the blog people from Fire Dog Lake blog.
Wonderful. I'll pop by and say hello. We, you know, us hillbillies, we kind of got to stick together.
You have a whole state, right?
Right. And we've spread out from it. You know, we've got a saying going here, you know, well, the last person out of West Virginia, please not forget to turn out the lights.
Well, my saying is push Bush, veto Alito.
Exactly. Exactly. What about Voinovich? I haven't heard anything much about Voinovich.
No, Voinovich is kind of laying low. Last thing he did was cry about John Bolton.
Right, and I almost felt like he might be an old school Republican when he did that.
Yeah, he's not saying much at all. So I assume from not hearing that he's going to go along with Bush. I can't understand it. Now, the other senator in Ohio is DeWine.
Right.
And he's going to be challenged by Paul Hatcher.
I saw the comments that Paul Hackett made, and I was incredibly proud of him, Karen, when he said that if 62% of the American people believe that we're going to create a second class of citizens based upon what their sexual proclivities were, that, yeah, they were wrong, and that was un-American.
Right. Paul's a good guy.
Yeah, that's Harry Truman democracy. That's, you know, I don't give them hell, I give them the truth, and they think it's hell.
Well, Paul was a practicing attorney in Cincinnati, and he actually volunteered to go to Iraq. And he has been in Iraq, and he did see action. So he didn't have to do that. And then he returned, and he's running for United States Senator from Ohio.
Well, I hope folks will get behind him, because Mike DeWine certainly hasn't done anything to earn the respect or anything along those lines in Ohio.
Oh, no, we call him DeWine.
Exactly. And, well, what is the state of the Democratic Party in Ohio, Karen?
Well,
we have
a new leader of the state Democratic Party. His name is Chris Redfern, and he's from northern Ohio, I think a little town called Port Clinton, north of Toledo. And he's a pretty good guy, and he's shaking things up a bit. Ohio is a Rust Belt state, as you know.
Right.
We're losing jobs. It's a giant sucking sound. And, you know, this should be our biggest thing in Ohio, is concentrating on jobs, not talking about putting up Ten Commandments signs and,
oh, God,
you know, things
I know.
Like that. Not that I'm against the Ten Commandments, but, you know, these people think that they should be in all public buildings.
Right. And you know, the funniest thing, we have failed to frame that issue, Karen, because when the religious right says that we've got to, that, you know, they want, everywhere you turn, you got to see, you know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass. when we got to do that, that is, and I don't know why we don't challenge them with this, that is a tacit admission by the religious right that they are failing at their jobs.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, Bush has been photographed many times giving the finger to people.
Yeah.
And Cheney, of course, uses the F word often. Now, these holy Christian people, they never complained to Bush or Cheney about their behavior.
Well, no, they don't. And for a while, Karen, I was willing to think that they were well-intentioned fools who were being used without really realizing it. But when Michael Scanlon testified in Congress under oath and let loose of that information, you know, he worked with Jack Abramoff. When he let loose of that information about the fact that when they wanted to get a gaming issue through, they would or stopped, they would circulate that information to Ralph Reed at the Christian Coalition, and that he in turn would contact, and these were Scanlon's words, that they would contact the email lists of the religious wackos.
Oh, absolutely, and they said they'll vote for it and think that they're voting against it.
Right, and so once I realized that that was public information out there, and these people knew that they were thought of by the very people who were using them as religious wackos, and they continued and persisted in doing that, at that point they ceased to be well-intentioned fools to me. At that point they just became something verging on evil.
Oh, when I was growing up, if we ever said any mild swear word, we'd get our mouth smacked by my grandmother. And, you know, these people aren't saying anything, and Jean Schmidt is one of them. And one of her things, and it just turns my stomach, she says this constantly in her meetings, she says, the baby has popped out of the womb, and we can't push it back in the womb. And it's like, what are you talking about, Jean? You know, whoever wants to push a baby back in the womb, and isn't womb a very biblical term? I mean, isn't it known as uterus now? And, you know, she's always saying that we can't push the baby back in the womb. And then another thing she says is a very Christian person she describes herself as. She says, you know, if my husband says something stinks, I have to go along with him because I sleep with him every night. And you want to say, what are you talking about, Jean? You know, that's more than we want to know.
And you, like all of these people, Karen, you will never know. You will never
know. Oh, we can't ask her to explain. We ask her at a meeting, how do you explain that President Bush has admitted that he is doing illegal spying within the confines of the United States? And Gene Schmidt answered, well, it's my belief that there are times when the United States Constitution should be suspended, such as times like this.
No, she didn't.
Yes, she did. She did.
Is that something... and
that's verifiable.
I'm sure that if the Turks don't already have it, I'm sure the Young Turks would love to have it. I would love to have it.
I don't think they have that, but I mean, yeah.
Could you please drop us both an email if you can find a link to that or something? I would be so grateful for that. I
could find a link, sure. Where do I send it?
Well, in my case, you send it to bob@headonradio.com. And I believe there are email links at theyoungturk.com. And youngturk.com.
Okay. I'm scribbling frantically here. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I just got cold water thrown in my face.
Well, I mean, you know, people laugh when I tell them what Gene Schmidt says, and I said, you know, I'm not being a comedian. This is what she really says. You know, she said, well, I have a copy of the Constitution in my purse, but I haven't read it yet. But I mean to.
And, oh, God.
Yeah, this is the way she talks. And she says, my husband's a stockbroker, and I'm going to be active in getting a stock exchange in Iraq. You know, things like this. And, you know,
An Elvis on Mars.
Oh, yeah. She went into a house where there's an eminent domain question where several people aren't selling their houses to shopping center interests. And she went in. Now, it's not her congressional district, and she went in without notifying the officials in that district. And she was talking to the man, and she said, well, this 81-year-old man doesn't want to sell his house, and the reason is it smells like his dead wife. And it's like, oh, my gosh. He wants to, you know, I'm sure that man didn't say, my house smells like a dead body, so I want to stay in it. You know, but that's the way Gene Schmidt talks and thinks.
Well, you know, this, and beyond just beating her, this is important stuff, Karen, because... a lot of us, you know, and I don't even use the term left. a lot of us normal people,
a lot of citizens.
Yeah, we think that the Republicans secretly would like to get rid of the Constitution, but they just can't say it. And here you're telling me that this woman is out there saying it for public consumption.
Oh yeah,
this should be shouted from the rooftops, for God's sake.
Yes, yes. It's pretty bad. There was a woman in the audience who put up her hand at the Gene Schmidt meeting, and she said, "You know, I'm getting a little offended at you referring to United States citizens always as being good Christians." She said, the woman said, "I'm a Buddhist," and Gene smiled at her and said, "Oh, is the Quran the holy book of the Buddhists?"
Dear God.
I know, it's just breathtaking.
This woman puts like acid on her cornflakes, doesn't she?
Oh yeah. She's incredible. And you know, she thinks, you know, she said, "Well, the reason I ran for Congress was I was home dusting furniture and somebody called me and said, Gene, why don't you run for Congress?" And so I did. I mean, it's like an 8-year-old talking.
I wish we had the Young Turks webcam up right now, because my lovely wife is clutching at her head and just, you hear this?
Yeah, I can. And, you know, it's my response, too. You know?
Oh, you bless your heart.
See,
I feel bad for you.
It's pretty hard to sit through these meetings, you know. It really is.
But if that doesn't motivate you, what does?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to hear Mean Gene. And, of course, Mean Gene follows the Bush code line. She does what if Bush said, you know, jump out the 15-floor window, Gene would do it.
Well, you know, maybe we could send some letters to George encouraging him to deliver that order.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, we could do what Dick Cheney does and call her on her intercom and say, "It's God, Gene, jump out the window." Yeah, she'd probably do it.
Karen, what a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I also am very much against strip search Sammy.
Oh.
And I was wondering why no one has questioned this 10-year-old girl about the strip search. She's now 18. And, you know, when...
I sense these people probably want to just be left alone.
Well, she could certainly come to prominence as she's 18 and say, you know, what happened. And, you know, it seems like somebody should find her. I could find her.
You know, exactly. Well, I think that's a good idea. I wish someone had had it, and you probably did, you know, 6 weeks ago. The saddest thing, though, you know, this young lady could probably be found. It's the people that can't speak anymore because of Alito's decisions or related to Alito's decisions that are the most heartbreaking. You know, of course, that he sanctioned the cops when they shot a 15-year-old black male in the back of the head in a flight situation. He wasn't threatening them. He was not armed. He hadn't turned on them.
That's who we're going to have on the Supreme Court. And
yeah.
It's not just for the next 40 years, assuming he lives to be 90. The decisions that he will make on the Supreme Court will affect the United States forevermore.
Well, exactly. And like I said, we've got little kids, my wife and I do, and they're, you know, we've raised them to be pretty blunt, and they look at us and they ask us direct questions. And one of them asked me today, "Daddy, why are you fighting so hard against Alito?" I mean, they know his name. They've heard us talk. And I explained to them that it's not just America right now he's going to screw up. I looked at him and I said, "Honey, it's your life they're gonna be messing with."
Oh,
and they looked at me and said,
"Grandchildren."
Yeah, get them, Dad.
Yeah, and you know, it's shameful. Mrs. Alito sitting there crying. You know, they coached her to cry, and the woman's so stupid she cried when a Republican said, "You're not a bigot," and she heard the word bigot, and then the chin started shaking and everything. You know, she immediately should have gotten up. She knew she was on TV.
And the only person with any sort of wide exposure who caught that was Jon Stewart on The Daily Show.
Well, it's just terrible, and, you know, it's my theory that Mrs. Alito is a clone of Sammy. You know, I think that her face is just Sammy Alito in drag.
Well, you know, the funny thing, though, and this is she was listed as Martha Ann Baumgardner, not Martha Ann Alito.
Yes.
Do you remember when the right wing had such a hissy fit when Hillary was using a hyphenated last name? "What's wrong? Is she too much of a feminist to take her husband's name? Blah, blah, blah." Why isn't that question being asked about Samuel Alito's wife?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they said that Hillary lost the governorship election for Bill Clinton in Arkansas because she insisted on being called Hillary Rodham Clinton. So then the next election, she changed her name to Hillary Clinton, and he got elected. But, you know, Martha Ann Baumgardner Alito has set women back 40 years. I mean, with that crying thing, I mean, I think it was her daughter or sister-in-law or somebody who had to tell her to leave. The woman's too stupid to say, excuse me, I'm leaving.
And then the next day, Karen, we had the video footage.
Oh, and he walks out and he doesn't even think.
Yeah, like she's a samurai's wife and has to stay 10 paces behind, for God's sake.
He didn't even give her a look. He didn't even give her a consideration. You know, that was his day, and it reminded me of the time when President Nixon was in office. He had a public birthday party, and he stood on the stage with Pat Nixon playing with a yo-yo, completely ignoring her.
I remember that.
Yeah, and she didn't count. And that's the same way with Alito, you know, he didn't even, when his wife was going boo-hoo-hoo-hoo, he didn't even turn around and say, excuse me.
You know, if I pulled a stunt like that on Agnes,
she'd whack your head.
Yeah, I mean, I'd get a lipstick in the back of the head or something. Hey, dummy.
Yeah, right. But, you know, he didn't even say, excuse me, we have to stop the hearing. My wife is upset. My other question is, why does the wife and the children always have to sit behind him? Isn't he man enough, grown up enough, that he can be questioned by senators without having his wifey behind him?
I have never to this day taken my wife and kids to a job interview.
No, I just think that's outrageous that, you know, they have to have the wife sitting there looking sweet and everything. You know, let him talk for himself. He wants to be on the Supreme Court. Honey, you don't have to be there. If you want to cry, stay at home.
Well, and beyond that, you know, if she's going to be there at the hearings, I want her there for the arguments on the Supreme Court, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, shall we just stand all the spouses behind the judges and get it over with?
Yeah, it's so sweet. Yeah.
I just
hope that they're going to filibuster Alito because, you know.
It must happen, Karen. It must happen.
I mean, this is the end of freedom. I mean, people are saying, oh, we have so many battles coming up. Well, this is a major one because this guy's going to stay on for the rest of his life.
Yeah, we lose this one, we can mail the rest of them in. I mean,
we had Rehnquist die in office. I mean, you know, he kept dragging to the hospital once a week, but he wouldn't give up.
Oh, sure. And you got Ann Coulter out there saying somebody literally, you know, did you catch
poison this? The food.
Yeah, poison John Paul Stevens creme brulee.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
That's a federal crime.
But, you know, Bill Clinton tells, you know, one lie about his relations with an intern, and they want to impeach him.
Oh, well, you know, not even so much that, Karen. Can you imagine if Jilly or Cenk or I or the Tom, Peter, Mike, Brad, can you imagine if we said something like that on the air, we would not get out the door before we were under arrest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you're familiar with the book Bush's Brain.
Yes.
The author of Bush's Brain was placed on the no-fly list.
Yes, I read that.
That's retaliation by Karl Rove. And he cannot get off the no-fly list. So whenever he needs to go to New York or somewhere, he has to take the train or drive because Karl Rove didn't like the things in the book, so Karl Rove put him on the no-fly list.
We are people get a little frustrated with me sometimes when we are dealing with abject evil.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in Fire Dog Lake Blogspot, they pointed out that Joseph Goebbels' absolute total war speech from 1943 has a lot of the phraseology that Bush uses in his speeches.
Well, you know, I've come to the conclusion that a lot of the things that I used to really enjoy, my favorite film of all time is Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. I've come to the conclusion that these misguided cons actually watched that film and didn't understand it was a comedy and that it was a warning. they thought it was some sort of training film, like a World War II VD film.
There's a history of Karl Rove destroying anybody who stood in his path since he was, you know, like 16.
Mm-hmm. Karen, I've got to roll on. I want to get a couple more, but wow, what a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Goodbye.
And let's see. Tony in California has been holding on for a long, long time. Tony,
hey.
Welcome to the program. Thanks for participating in the filibuster.
Thank you. Glad to be on. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Terrific. That was a great call, too. And, you know, I'm so glad she mentioned the author of Bush's Brain. I was thinking, you know, that's something that you guys on radio should keep coming back to all the time and try and get this guy off because, you know, he has some visibility. If it happens to me, I have none. But at least he's somebody that people can talk about and can try and get him off. And, like, that question should be going up and should be discussed in the press, and it needs to be driven home every day in liberal progressive radio that this guy who is on a no-fly list. So that's just one thing I'm going to put out there to make it as part of your ragu that you stir up every day when you're broadcasting. I wanted to say that you remember when you were talking about how, you know, you can't understand how Republicans are just putting up with this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody caught Washington Journal this morning. I was ending last night's filibuster broadcast and fell asleep watching this. They had on Christopher Shays, and then they had this guy, Steve, what's his name, from the coalition, one of the Republican money organizations, at any rate. These callers, they said 15 or 30 minutes if just Republicans were to call in. 30 to 40% of these people were so upset at being Republicans that they questioned being in them. Their energy prices are going up. They don't have disposable income. They can't accept the power grab and so forth. I was just amazed as I listened to person after Republican after Republican after Republican call in enraged. Now, I don't know if they were plants or if they were Democrats getting through. I think some people thought that they were, but they sure talked like Republicans, and they were grassroots Republicans, and they were, you know, old-time conservative Republicans who just didn't recognize their party. And as I watched this, I was shocked, and I thought, my God, am I hearing this? I mean, they're really upset.
Well, and I've met a lot of those kinds of Republicans too, Tony. But the thing is, they have been thoroughly marginalized. It's worth remembering the words of Dwight Eisenhower, 1954 or so. He said, "Any national party that puts forward an end to Social Security will cease to be a national party in a matter of years." And those kind of principled Republicans are not, I mean, you know, they're as marginalized and they are as not to be heard from as liberals were for a long time until we started speaking up again. I don't know if you can reach across the aisle with these people, but the effort should certainly be made.
I'm talking about citizens.
Yeah.
No, they're there for the taking. Oh, no. These people are there for the taking. And then you listen to a guy like Chris Shays, congressman from Connecticut, who basically is a fairly honorable guy. I don't understand how he could put up with Bush, but it's politics. And he's acknowledging a lot of this. And this guy, Steve, I wish you could remember it. He was acknowledging that a lot of the fiscal policies were really terrible. And I was listening, because they were talking about the state of the Republican Party before Bush's speech tomorrow night and so forth. So I just want to say that I was, it's the first time I've seen Republicans get on kind of one after the other, really disparaging their party, saying, I don't recognize this party, and I'm not going to be a part of it. So that was the kind of emboldening, and I also feel like that's a very good sign. I got an interesting email. I don't know if you've got this one. It's come in from activists about the Million Phone March tomorrow.
No. Sure.
Well, this
just
arrived in my box. It says Million Phone March Monday to stop Alito. Dear friends and activists, I'll just skim through this, but the point is, the opening line is, over the weekend you generated a tsunami of phone calls supporting a filibuster of Alito. Today at 4:30 p.m. is the cloture, and with your dedication we'll generate two tsunamis. So they want everybody to call in to their senators tomorrow, and then they give a list of who's up for election: Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, Daniel Akaka in Hawaii, Joe Lieberman in Connecticut, Bill Nelson in Florida, Ben Nelson in Nebraska, Jeff Bingham in New Mexico, Carper, Cole, Cantwell in Washington. She's somebody to definitely go to, by the way. Byrd, Menendez, Lincoln Chafee is a Republican, Olympia Snow. They give a whole bunch of this. They give a lot of phone numbers. I can maybe I should email this to you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Bob@headonradio.com.
Is that head on?
Yeah, HEADONRADIO.
All right. That sounds great. And then, you know, I got a nice email from this guy, Richard Green, you know, who was on A Strategist.
Yes.
And I laid out a lot of ideas based on the show that we just heard in his conversation. And he's nicely asked me to call him and discuss the ideas. Of course, I don't blame him, because you know how it is in an email when you're writing, you're dropping subjects and verbs. How he understood what I had to say gives him a lot of credit. But the point I was making, and the point that you're making, I think, tonight, and that we're all making, is if we grab the stage now, and they don't, and they filibuster, but they don't go down. I mean, it's got to be a split screen at the State of the Union speech, and Democrats debating Alito on stage. I mean, they gotta broadcast both. That's the point. If we can do it.
Realistically, it can't happen.
Why?
Because
it happened for Reagan.
Well, no. Tomorrow is the cloture vote.
Right. So then they're going to have... Oh,
no, State of the Union's Tuesday night.
But the cloture vote, but so that we win the cloture.
Oh yeah, okay.
If we win the cloture, then the debate continues.
Yeah, sorry.
Remember,
I'm running a little slow.
It's a debate.
Right. Then, and the other thing that's got to, this dovetails nicely into another issue. The other thing that has to happen is that people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden have got to have a knot jerked in their butts, because this business of, well, you know, I'll vote against cloture once.
Yeah. Well, I wrote, yes, but here was my opening line to Biden. And by the way, I spent 3 hours trying to get through to Biden's by fax. I finally found a number that worked. Which is basically my opening line to all these guys is, how long are we going to let this president of the United States slap us in the face with our own constitution? And, you know, does Biden think that anyone's going to vote for him for president if he's going to get slapped around like this? I mean, that floppy performance he had with his Princeton cap and Barack Obama, where's that? There's no manliness. There's no leader there. Are you going to let him just say, I don't care what Congress thinks? I'm going to do what I want? What's he doing? I mean, as Molly Ivins pointed out, you know, we own this country. You know, we are the board members of this country. They are just driving the ship.
You're absolutely right. But the thing, one of the things that has to come out of this, Tony, is that idea of ownership has got to really, really get legs. It's got to become part of the subsoil of at least our side of the fight, and whomever else we can bring into it as well.
Well, you're so right. And one thing she said that should be a mantra for us too, she said that the press should no longer consider the Bush administration a credible source. Now, Harry Reid should feel the same way. Biden should feel the same way. We should feel the same way. Everybody should question them because they are no longer a credible source. They've lied. They're involved in too many scandals. You can't have people arrested in the White House, for God's sake, like Savavian. I mean, so the point is that the press is going to – we have to – and whatever we say to the press, whatever we communicate to the press, we should put at the bottom of our names or something, the Bush administration is no longer a credible source. And that ought to be it. Molly, God bless you, Molly Ivins, for pointing that out. She's a brilliant, funny satirist, but she's a great American.
She absolutely is. And the thing that we've got to do, Tony, is we got to get to, and the analogy I use around here, we got to get to the NASCAR people. We got to get to the demographics for Desperate Housewives. You know who watches Desperate Housewives more than anybody else in the United States? Right-wing Christians. We have got to get to those people. I don't know how. I'm really short on solutions for it. But
Richard Green was talking about, the Democratic strategist.
Yeah.
He was basically saying to Brad, look, these people, it's like, you know, people in Utah, they think 1 second a day about politics. That's all they're, and they're getting framed by Rush Limbaugh and so forth. And they don't. It's like, he said, it's like speaking inside baseball to people who hardly know the game baseball. So Harry Reid and these guys are back there wondering whether this is the fight to take or not, because they poll these people all the time and they know that they're not following the issues.
Yeah, the last numbers I saw, 19% of America was following this fight. But the thing is, that gives us a leg up, Tony.
Yeah,
and you know, go away from this wonderful experience that the Young Turks have started. Go away from this and be emboldened. Don't be afraid to talk about it in the line at the grocery store. Don't be afraid to talk about it when you're buying gas. My God, the best opening in the world that you've got for engaging another individual on this topic is the price of a gallon of gas when you're standing there at the pump.
Absolutely, man.
And don't be afraid. You know, these guys have been in our face for 20 years now. Don't be afraid to get in theirs. It is not a sin to look at somebody and say, look at what you're paying for gas. Did you vote for George Bush? Did you vote for that? Do you want a guy on the Supreme Court who's going to sanction anything that the guy who screwed that up? Do you want that?
Well, that's what these Republicans were complaining about this morning. In other words, they're saying, look, my gas, my health care, where's my disposable income? This is what they're saying. Where's my disposable income? How am I supposed to keep up?
I'm 60 years old.
I'm
so glad the blinders are off, Tony. But honest to God, I want to shake these people sometimes. You know, because
I'm pointing it out by saying, you know, this is festering in the body politic. It's not just Republicans. It's everybody who's going to feeling this. So there's room for a big turnover here, a big change. There's clearly a sea change. The Democrats are favored. Their ideas are favored. What was it? 57% to 32% over Bush's. That's one of those crazy poll ideas.
Yeah, and
was that on Meet the Press today? Or something?
Yeah, 51 to 32.
Something like that.
Yeah,
and Broder says, but the Democrats don't have any ideas. Perfect.
Well, I think
we do. So shut up, Broder.
Dadgummit, Tony. I saw David Broder say that, and we're considering a movement over at my show of creating and selling for charity or whatever some rubber bricks that you can throw at the television when David Broder says that kind of crap, because this I'm so sick of that frame that and the phrase that Broder used was the Democrats haven't come out of a manifesto of their own. How in the hell does he expect us to do that? When John Conyers wants to hold a hearing, they send him to the basement of the Capitol. They won't even let him have a congressional hearing room. And David Broder says we don't have a manifesto. How the hell do we know?
Yeah, did Bush put a Social Security plan on the table? Enough. And so they're going, well, what the hell are we going to stick our neck out on the line for? That's why this movement is so important. That's why these evenings are important, because they're getting blowback from us right now, and it's going to stay that way, and it's going to follow them right into 2006. I sent you that email, but it's got the list of those who are up for election. And every time I make a phone call to somebody out of state, I tell them, this is a national issue. I contribute to the national senatorial and congressional campaigns, so take this seriously, even though my zip code isn't in your state.
Well, and you're absolutely right.